Obama rat smack John McCain. Okay. Hey, you want a really interesting.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Steve Singeiser, a high school teacher and coach, as well as contributing editor over at Daily Kos. We're going to be talking about education and the cuts that are going on in Wisconsin and how that's going to affect what's going on across the rest of the country. Here in Pennsylvania, we saw a pretty sizable chunk of the education budget slashed out. We're going to see some cuts in every district and how they're dealing with that. So we'll talk to Steve about that. And also in the second hour, Roxanne Pauline's going to be here, Northeastern Region Area Labor Federation Coordinator, talking about some of the things that are going on up in her area, especially as she has been hunting down a meeting with Lou Barlotta, the Republican representative up in that area. Also, we'll talk a little bit about the Hershey situation and what she's doing, I guess, this evening. They are having one of those kitchen table events. It'll be interesting to hear her story. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So the big news today, I guess, tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it is scheduled that former House Speaker John Purcell and an ex-House GOP staffer, they're saying, and I don't know if it's true, but they're saying that there may be a guilty plea. He is being charged with public corruption, 82 counts of theft, criminal conspiracy, conflict of interest, and obstruction of justice. And I'm thinking, he must have gotten a really sweet deal. Either that or the evidence was so overwhelming. And there's a part of me that believes maybe there's a reality series here. Maybe there's some good television. Maybe they can put him in the same cell with Mike Vian. They can compare notes from each side of the aisle and how this whole thing went out. Now, Purcell, 32 years in the state legislature. That is a long time. They're saying the two pleas are anticipated at 1 o'clock, which will mean at least 5 of the 10 defendants initially charged will not be going to trial. Purcell's former aide, Samuel Buzz Stokes, turns out happens to be his brother-in-law, so that's going to be an interesting family reunion. Campaign aide Don McClintock and former Purcell chief of staff Paul Tauhey all entered guilty pleas 2 weeks ago. So it looks like half of the folks are not going to go to trial. Good. At some point, it would be nice to put all this stuff behind us. And as I said from the very beginning in all of this, if they broke the law, there's a place for them. And we have a nice gray bar hotel that they can sit in and rot while they do their time. Because you need to send that message to the future people saying, look, we're not going to stand with you misappropriating money. We're not going to stand with you, screwing up with taxpayer dollars. So this could be a good thing. It will be interesting to see tomorrow at 1 o'clock where this goes. But early reports, he is going to plead guilty. So I'm kind of interested to see what kind of deal they struck. So we'll go from there. The hurricane, this Hurricane Irene, the people at the National Climatic Data Center are saying that this is the 10th billion-dollar disaster this year. The 10th billion-dollar disaster. And you look at, I'm looking at the map that the National Climatic Data Center throws out. And there's a whole bunch of these, real quick, Hurricane Irene just the other day, the upper Midwest flooding that happened over the summer, 5 deaths. We've spent, somewhere in the neighborhood of, $3 billion between what was insured and what was not. You look at the Mississippi River flooding during the spring and into the summer, took out parts of the Ohio Valley, range in the area of, $2 to $4 billion, 2 deaths there. The southern plains, the southwest drought, all the heat waves, because, there's no global warming. It's going to cost us somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 billion. And then you get into tornado season, and there was a bunch. April, May, the whole tornado season, which you look at the states that it is concentrated heavily in the south, heavily in the Midwest, and you go, look at all of this money. All of this disaster, all of this destruction, hundreds of deaths, billions of dollars. And then you fast forward to Eric Cantor. And you fast forward to the Republican response, which is not, we're going to do what we need to do to help these folks. We're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that every citizen is cared for. No. And I guess I got to give Cantor credit. I got to give the Republican Tea Party types, I got to give them credit. They despise government. They don't believe in government. They only believe in the self, the individual, me. They don't care about community. They don't care about society. They don't care about the commons. They don't care about their neighbors. They care about me. It's all about the me. So I'm okay. Screw you is the new model. So Cantor saying, we're not going to bring in, we're not going to spend any money unless we can cut it from somewhere else. If we can take food out of the mouths of children, if we can take money away from granny, if we can steal it from education, if we can take it from anywhere, but we're not going to spend money that we don't have because we're broke. And we're not going to tax rich people, heaven forbid we do that, to take care of these folks. But he was on Fox News, and he said, I agree, we'll do something. He says he supports $1 billion in disaster relief as part of the Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Bill. $1 billion. Now, understand, Irene, they're saying at the very minimum, $7 billion. I've seen numbers up to 10, some up to 12 that we're going to have to spend in the cleanup. I've seen numbers $45 billion of lost economic activity. A lot of problems here. So Cantor says he supports $1 billion in disaster relief as part of the Department of Homeland Security Appropriation Bill. Now you go back to July when Mary Landrieu from Louisiana stood up and said, I think I got a real problem with this appropriations bill. Especially since you're spending almost $13 billion to train the troops and equip the troops and the police in Afghanistan, but provide only $2 billion of money for first responders here at home. There's a real mix-up of priorities. And understand that House bill is gonna slash funding for those first responders by about 40% on top of the nearly 20% that was in the 2011 budget. So again, it comes back down to the priorities. And Cantor's, doing an amazing job of coming out saying we're going to stand our ground. Anything has to be offset by cuts. Now understand, Cantor was a yes man during the Bush years, a very easy yes man. Yes man for the Bush handouts. Yes man for the Iraq War. Yes, man, for raising the debt ceiling. 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 Five times. There were no talk of spending cuts. And I think Jay Carney hit it right on the head, the press secretary, when he said, you know, I wish they would have had this kind of commitment to looking for offsets during the previous administration. Maybe we wouldn't have the massive debt that we have now. And I look at this, and I have to be honest, it's frustrating to me as someone who does believe in community and does believe that we are part of this nation and we're all in this together, to see someone like Cantor, to see the Ron Pauls, to see all of these radical Republicans saying, screw those people. It's not us. We don't care about them. We're not going to help them. We're not going to give them any money to help make sure that their homes are secure. They're not going to make... No, we got tax cuts to hand out to the to our cronies. And I got to be honest, I'm happy in a way that they're being honest. You have to give them credit. They're honest. They're sticking to their convictions, which, you know, 2012 coming around the corner, I hope you'll remember, especially all of those southern states that have had, you know, 20, 30 events this year that have cost lives, have destroyed property. They don't want to help you anymore. They want you on your own. So remember that. Heavily Republican South, when you push this ideology of hooray, you're on your own. And truth be told, if they keep this up, and I hope they do in a certain sense, if they keep this up, the never-fail prediction by this Alan Lichtman at the American University will come to fruition. Evidently, he has this winning streak of nearly three decades of picking the winner in the presidential elections. He has done a, he has his model, he has his system, and he has picked every president since 1981. And he is picking Obama to win here in 2012 because I guess it doesn't take a genius. You look at Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and you go, there's nobody there. I don't know that he deserves, in a sense, to be reelected, but there's nobody. There's nobody offering any better ideas. There's nobody offering any way to turn this country around. And all we keep hearing from the right is the same stuff that got us into the mess we're into now. So it doesn't get any easier than this. And I think it's, you know, it's a cakewalk at some point, because I'm hoping that folks look at these policies that the right wants to push and says, not so much. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this with your thoughts.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says in many ways the U.S. has lost ground since Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was alive. Jesse Russell reports.
This weekend, Washington, D.C. played host to the National Symposium on Jobs, Justice, and the American Dream. The symposium was held at the headquarters for the AFL-CIO and was intended to coincide with the unveiling of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. The dedication of the King Memorial was originally scheduled for Sunday, but due to Hurricane Irene, it was postponed. The symposium still went on as scheduled. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka spoke at the symposium. He said, over the last few years, the United States has lost ground on achievements reached during King's lifetime. He noted the national unemployment rate is twice what it was when King marched on Washington, D.C.
We live in a country less economically equal than in Dr. King's time. Jobs are scarcer. It's harder to go to college. And the right to a voice on the job has largely been taken away from America's workers.
The new date for the official dedication of the King Memorial will be in September or October.
Santos Castaneda is back to work at a warehouse in Chino, California, after being fired last week for passing out leaflets promoting a safe workplace. Castaneda says he was fired moments after speaking out at a rally urging NFI Industries to correct workplace abuses. Warehouse Workers United's Shaharier Couchy says that Castaneda was reinstated after unfair labor practices were charged and thousands signed a petition urging Walmart and NFI Industries to rehire the worker activist.
Probably somebody above, either way at the company or even at the retail level, said, you have to fix this because clearly it was so blatant that, especially to do it in front of a community picket, a group of over 150 community members, clergy, leaders, to do that right in front of us while we were there supporting these workers. You know, it's kind of a thumb in the eye to all those folks who did come out. Workers are always taking a risk to stand up and speak up for their rights, but there also is a clear benefit. If you stand up with a group, you join up with your coworkers, you join up with your colleagues and do it together, there's a better chance that you'll be able to be protected because there's strength in numbers.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Fascist humanity, be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight. You fascists provide.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day comes from Dean Baker, who was supposed to be our guest right now, but he's doing Rachel Maddow, so I kind of understand that. But he writing in The Nation under the heading of Why We Aren't Like Greece, he says, 28 million people are unemployed, underemployed, or out of the workforce. Policy debates should be focused on getting these people back to work. Unfortunately, the people who control the national agenda care little about the devastation they have wreaked with their greed and incompetence. Baker goes on to say their philosophy of government is that a dollar that goes to the middle class and poor is a dollar that should be going to the wealthy. And again, you know, you look at these disasters, you look at the money that's going out to help folks in need. Heaven forbid we should ask those who are doing very well to chip in and maybe help those folks. Nope, can't have that. We have to cut it from somewhere else. Probably another program that would have helped them. Probably another program that would help someone else. Again, it's all about hooray for me and pretty much screw you. That is the mentality. Anyway, I don't know if you've been watching this, Jake. There's this jockeying back and forth between Boehner, the Speaker of the House, and Obama over regulations. And they're sniping back and forth over each other, at each other, writing letters back and forth. And I don't want to get into the whole horse race. The reality is the Republicans want no regulations. They want nothing in place. They want business to do whatever it is that business wants to do. If they want to pollute, if they want to fill the air with smog, so be it. If they want to exploit, you know, students from another country, so be it. If they want to exploit labor people in this country, so be it. We need to be more business friendly. You know, we need to get rid of all those pesky minimum wages and all those maximum hour laws. And what the heck? While we're at it, chuck the weekend. Don't need that. You should be living to work like in generations past. You shouldn't work to live. You should be living to work every day. That's all you do until the day you drop dead. That's business friendly. That's policy we can all get behind.
Well, it shouldn't surprise you. I mean, they're carrying the water for the Republican Party. I mean, the massive amounts of money that the Republicans have gotten from big business in the last year. Big business isn't given to the Republican Party because they like them. They're given to the Republican Party because they want to push, they want the Republicans to push their agenda. Why should this surprise us? The mantra of the Republicans has always been lower taxes, less government, less regulation. And it has always proven when they've gotten their way to be a disaster for workers and in many instances a disaster for America.
So you look at big business, they're throwing the money out there. They're up for the fights. In fact, they're feeling their oats. They've had a lot of wins. They've been able to put some chinks in the armor of labor. And some death blows in some instances. But they're up for it, and they're ready. And I look at this story about Gibson Guitar. They make the Les Paul, a company I like their product. Evidently, they have been using wood. Now, this is, allegedly they're using wood that is from India that they're not supposed to. And it's a violation, of some of our laws not to use this specific type of wood. So what happened is, the feds came in and they took some stuff. They took the wood. They took, files. They took, stuff because they're investigating. It's part of what they do. So the radical right has jumped on this. Well, this is, they're out of control. They're overreaching. They're invasive. They're these really horrible company. These horrible government people. We got to get rid of them because we should be able to use illegally imported wood from India. We should be able to use that because business should be able to do whatever it wants. So Gibson went on their Twitter account and they said, the only reason that they're doing this is they're bullying and harassing us. They want to shut us down and a whole bunch of nonsense. When the reality is if you are importing things illegally into the country, I think you need to have an enforcement arm. You need to have a big brother there to make sure that we all play by the same rules. So the conservative media has gone nuts. The idiots over at Red State came out and said, whatever the specious merits of the government's investigation, the broader lesson is the federal regulatory authority is so expansive and vague, it enables corrupt bureaucrats to intimidate and punish nearly any honest business. Honest business? Hello? Did I not just say that they're accused of importing illegal wood? It's illegal? Intimidate? Honest business? No. Illegal activity. That's what we should be going after. Another one of these right-wing rags have suggested a nefarious political motive. It's a plot. It's a conspiracy. Because after all, Obama wants to destroy all the jobs in the country. And, you go, at some point, do we have to not bash all regulation? And the answer is no. We have to bash all of them. Because according to the radical right, there is no such thing as a good regulation. I point to this story now in California. You may remember last year there was a pipeline that exploded. Pacific Gas and Electric had a gas line that exploded. This pipeline blew up, killed numerous people. If I remember, it blew up 38 homes and killed 8 people. Had a bunch of injuries, whole 9 yards. What I find interesting is the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board's findings. Their chairwoman, Deborah Herzman, she said, our investigation revealed that for years, PG&E exploited weaknesses in a lax system of oversight. We also identified regulators that placed a blind trust in the companies that they were charged with overseeing to the detriment of public policy and public safety. She says, for government to do its job, it cannot trust alone. It must verify through effective oversight. I go, yes, you need somebody to look at these pipes and inspect them, because what happened was they put in new regulations saying, hey, you need to make sure that the welds are up to spec. You need to make sure that the pipes are up to spec. The materials are up to spec. But what they ended up doing is they said, we're only going to put those regulations on the new stuff. Because understand, the lobbyists got in here and said, it would be really costly if we had to upgrade all that old stuff. So let's just do it on the new stuff. We'll make sure the new stuff is good. So when the old stuff blows up, we can just replace it as it blows up. I guess that's how it went. So they didn't bother to oversee what was going on. And boom, you've got 8 people dead, 38 homes. Boom, gone. And, I just kind of shake my head. and say, you know, there's a reason we have regulations. There's a reason that you inspect pipelines. There's a reason that you have an expert, hopefully, who's not in bed with the company and whose job it is to ensure that we have public safety. Not this idea that the right keeps throwing out to us. Well, the company will act in its own best interest, and they will do what's right. I agree with the first part. They will do what's in their own best interest, and their own best interest is profit. As much money as they can line their pocket with, they're happy. If they've got to put money out to make sure that the welds are done right or done over in times when you have to, or if the material's deteriorating, that costs money out of the pocket. Not so good. So it's in their interest to go an extra day, an extra day, an extra day, because the longer you can put off repairing that stuff, the more profit you can put into your pocket. And if you have 38 homes that blow up and cause 8 deaths, that's why you have insurance companies. And that's why you have the federal government and the taxpayers. Because then you say, well, it wasn't our fault. We don't have the money to pay for all this stuff. We need to have you bail us out. And, you know, it's nice to say, well, we should hold them accountable. They just filed bankruptcy, and we're stuck with it anyway. This is the kind of stuff that drives me insane. This is the kind of stuff when I hear the radical right open their mouth about, we need less regulation. I look to stories like this. 8 people are dead. What is that worth? How much is it at worth? To you, it might not be very much. But to those 8 people, I'm sure an awful lot. Just a thought. I may be wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. And oftentimes, and I know people, and you know people, Rick, that are good people. They happen to be conservative, but they don't. When you get into an intelligent conversation, I don't think they've thought it through. When you talk about, well, you know, the government's too harsh, you have to have less regulation, then you start talking about less regulation. You're talking about some very, very serious situations created if you don't have adequate situations.
So where do you oversight. End up, where do you end up getting the money for this? How do we make sure that we have a regulatory body that actually does its job? Because for too long, what we've done is we've relied on this ideology that, well, corporations will police themselves, that they're perfectly capable of doing that. They're the experts. They know what they're doing. And they will police themselves because they don't want to get sued. And it worked pretty well for those 29 miners who've gotten killed, and all of the miners recently in the last couple of years who've died on the job. And it's worked out pretty well for the folks, those 11 folks who were killed on the Deepwater Horizon rig. It worked out well for them, I guess. The corporate profits above their lives. And you know, I happened to be watching C-SPAN the other day, one of my favorite channel. And they had Bill Gates on there, and he was talking to a bunch of EU politicians. And they're trying to figure out how we solve this monetary problem. How do we get the money that we need? How do we encourage the very wealthy to be more philanthropic? How do we get the wealthy to invest in education? How do we do this? What do we need to do? And what I found interesting was Gates's initial response to the question of, how do you get the wealthy to be more philanthropic? The very first thing that came out of his mouth, the estate tax. I mean, it's amazing to me, but the very first thing out of his mouth was the estate tax. When we come back, talk a little bit more about this. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Smith Show. If you find it necessary to declare on national television that, quote, I am a serious person, you're probably not. Meet Michelle Bachmann. She's currently running for president, but suffering a few credibility problems. One is that she keeps creating her own fanciful version of history. For example, she recently bewildered Iowa voters by asserting that the Founding Fathers had magnanimously included every American in the nation's new government. Quote, "It didn't matter the color of people's skin," she marveled. "It didn't matter whether they were of a higher class or a lower class. It made no difference." Seriously? Indeed, Bachman plowed straight ahead into a fantasy about the founder's glorious work to free the slaves. She insisted that these wealthy, white, slave-owning men, quote, "worked tirelessly until slavery was no more in the United States." Seriously. No surprise, then, that the Congresswoman also invents her own personal history. While she unsparingly attacks Washington's spending addiction, she apparently doesn't own a mirror. It turns out that her husband's counseling clinic has received thousands of dollars in state and federal grants. Oh, she dodges, those tax dollars didn't come to us. Seriously? Yes, she explains, the money went to train our clinic's employees, as though that's not a subsidy for their business. Then there is the $260,000 in subsidies for her family's farm. Oh, she dissembled, that went to my father-in-law, adding that I have never gotten a penny from the farm. Seriously? But wait, she's listed as a partner in the farm, and her financial disclosure forms report that, in fact, she has received $105,000 in income from it. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bachman says she wants to take government back. And in all seriousness, it looks like she's already clawing back her piece of it.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So, again, like I said in the last break, we were I was watching C-SPAN, and Gates is on there talking about, you know, how do you get the wealthy to be more philanthropic? And he did, had a really vague answer, and it, you know, hey, it's time-tested, you know, you got to work on this, you got to do that. And there are, you know, a couple of things that really aren't going to amount to much. This idea of how do we get the wealthy to do more? How do we get the wealthy to spend more on education? I think that's the wrong question. But that seems to be the direction that we're going in this country. I remember during the Bush years, we kept pushing this policy in Africa that we're going to only teach abstinence only over there. That's it. We're going to only teach abstinence only. And if you talk about family planning, if you talk about abortion, you talk about any of that stuff, we're going to cut everything off. No condoms, no nothing. And what we'll then do is we'll sell you AIDS drugs. Seems a little bit backwards to me. And that's kind of the whole radical rights view of things. So again, how do you get the money you need to pay for things that society deems necessary? Well, I've been getting these emails from folks talking about P3s, which is why yesterday when we talked with Donna Cooper, my main reason for bringing her on, I got to tell you, she shocked the heck out of me with the whole thing that Wall Street walked away telling them to go pound salt because they weren't going to make enough money off the deal. Kind of interesting. But I've been getting these, you know, this whole P3 push, and the moneyed interests are really pushing this. And they're really trying to sell this idea. Well, you know, these public-private partnerships, this is the way to go. In fact, this one guy, Michael Lukowski, he's a bigwig over at NYU. He's a senior fellow at one of their institutes and a P3 expert. He cited a poll by the Rockefeller Foundation that, you know, basically saying all these people love P3s. They just think it's the greatest thing ever. All these voters support it. 85% of Republicans, 84% of conservatives, 80% of Tea Party people. 79% of those liberals and 78% of those Democrats and 77% of those moderates and, you know, all the independents, 73% love P3s. We just love it. And all across the country, everybody loves it. Everybody loves P3s. And because what they're trying to set you up for is say, we need these P3s. We need this public, private partnership to make sure that we don't increase our spending. But here's the problem. These P3s don't eliminate our risks. So what ends up happening, and again, What I'd like to say is to my Tea Party friends, who evidently 80% of you love the idea of a P3, when you talk about the Freddie and Fannie, ultimate P3, man, public-private partnerships. The public backed up the private interest to go out and speculate like hell. And the same thing can happen to building projects. And here's what ends up happening. Shopping malls, too, which is why you see a number of them not done. And that's my concern with P3s. We're going to see all this speculation, all this. We're going to make a lot of money, and they're going to get their money back in low-interest loans, and everything's going to be great for them. You and I are going to get stuck with a whole bunch of half-done projects. You and I are going to get stuck with the bill, which means now that what they were working on has failed, we still have to then go and do the actual project. Now, they're saying, well, you know, it's going to be these P3s, they're less expensive. There's more innovation. It's going to be speedier. There'll be more accountability. But the reality is that hasn't really fleshed out. We've seen many failures, delays. Anytime you do anything in a CEO boardroom, are you kidding me? Transparency? I think we better check our meds. But from a political standpoint, what it does is it helps take it off the books. So we don't have those big deficits. We don't have to report it. It's all those. That's private money. But at the end of the day, we are still on the hook. The private money can always file bankruptcy and go away. And my other big problem is the hot speculative money. The fact that, you know, hey, we've got this great, great bridge we're going to build you. And then they do half the job. A lot like some of the fly-by-night contractors who come in and say, oh, we'll build you a school, we'll build the hospital, or whatever, we're going to underbid everybody. Then they come back about halfway through, the money's all gone. Well, we don't have the ability to finish it. You've got to help us. And then what happens? You and I are on the hook, and it ends up costing us more down the road, which is why I say the first thing we should be talking about is we should be investing this ourselves, much like when they wanted to sell the turnpike. If the tolls were going to go up, raise the tolls. If we needed a little bit of extra money for it, it's our asset. Don't lease it off. You want to talk about the ultimate P3? The ultimate public-private partnership right now is war. You look at what's going on in Iraq, and you look at what's going on in Afghanistan. I don't know how anybody can make any other conclusion. And anytime I talk about war, I think about Major General Smedley Butler, who wrote the piece War is a Racket, which I suggest people read. I mean, it's like 16 pages long. It's a quick hit, but it is so filled with important stuff. And you know, a couple of the quotes that come out of it I think are important. Butler said that war is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. A racket is best described, he said, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of people. Only a small inside group know what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of a very few at the expense of the very many. Out of a war, a few people make huge profits. And you look at what's going on, and that's the reality. And he goes into the fact that, you know, he spent over 33 years in the active military. And he says, look, I was the muscle for big business. I was the guy. I was the guy who went in and went after it, went into Mexico and made that area safe for the oil interests. I went into Haiti, into Cuba, made it good place, fertile ground for National City Bank and their boys. He said I went to, you know, half a dozen Central American republics just to benefit those Wall Street bankers. He said I helped purify Nicaragua, you know, so that the Brown Brothers, the international banking house of the Brown Brothers, and you may think Prescott Bush, Grandpappy Bush, Brown Brothers, there you go. All of the stuff he talks about. And the key quote here is he says, you know, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was operate his racket in three districts. He said, I operated on three continents. And unfortunately, you look at this and you go, the guy's not wrong. Now understand, he wrote this in the 30s. He wrote this in the 1930s about World War I and before. And he said, it's all a racket, man. We're getting screwed here. And I point to the story, yesterday's story in USA Today, that they reported that the Pentagon spent more than $720 million in the last 10 years on late fees for shipping containers. Late fees alone. You know, those 20-foot, you know, those metal boxes that they put on the back of trucks? Each one of those can rack up more than $2,200 in fees. So you want to talk about patriotism? You want to talk about love of country? These shipping companies, they love their country so much that they're only going to sock them $2,200 for being late. In fact, they've got a great scam going. Evidently, they've got a purchase agreement to where if you don't return them in a certain amount of time, hey, you bought it. Congratulations, it's yours. Now, understand, one of these boxes, worth about $3,200. If you don't return it in a certain amount of time, they charge you $7,400. You want to talk about a scam? You want to talk about a ripoff, a heist? And this guy, John Pike, executive director of GlobalSecurity.org, he said the cost stems from the mistaken belief that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq would be brief and the late fees would be minimal. He goes on to say, this is real money, and we've spent a lot of it on what amounts to fines for overdue library books. And the reality is, these are good, God-fearing American companies. Because, you know, we're all in this together, right? This is the fight of our generation. This is the defining moment. And what it really is it's a screw job. It's these big companies profiting wildly from the privatization of war. And during, you know, during the Bush years, we did more privatization of our military than I think we have in the history of the country. And you look at this piece by Sharon Weinberger from the Center for Public Integrity. The headline, Windfalls of War, Pentagon's no-bid contract triples in 10 years of war. And they go through and talk about these different companies that have gotten all of these no-bid contracts for stuff that doesn't work, wish list kind of stuff, like this lightning weapon that it's supposed to shoot lightning bombs to, you know, detonate roadside bombs. It doesn't work, but we've given them $50, $60 million. And you go story after story after story where the Defense Department is just, you know, going, yeah, here, get it out the door. We need stuff. We need procurement. Go, go. In fact, the report says the Defense Department dollars flowing into non-competitive contracts have almost tripled since the terrorist attacks of 9/11. According to an analyst by the Center for Public Integrity, the data shows that the value of Pentagon contracts without competition topped $140 billion in 2010. And you go through this, and it's really just another example of us wasting money. And why have we wasted all this money on war? Well, to profit them, of course. And what has it done for us in the working class? What has it done for we, the folks in the middle class? We, the ones who actually create the wealth, fight the wars, and suffer the consequences for the bad decisions that really need to stop. Especially when you look today that Iraqi Prime Minister Ali al-Maliki said, we want you out of here by December. No permanent bases in Iraq. Gather the sheep, get the flock out. Now, they're kind of backpedaling, saying, well, you know, we're going to, you know, keep some troops after December 31st. We're going to do something. And they're saying, no, we don't want you here. In fact, the guy that we've put in, he's got close ties to Iran. We've done the worst possible thing we could have done, but we're not going to admit that. Because we're exceptional, Jake. We're exceptional. We always make the right decisions. And look, and you look at this thing with al-Maliki. He was in exile in Iran from 79 to 80. And this is the guy running the country.
Well, if I can go back a little bit, you were talking about some of the horrendous things happening in our defense budget. I mean, during the lifting the debt ceiling argument, some of the Democrats were saying, and it's, I believe they're absolutely 100% accurate, that one place we can look for cutbacks in spending is a defense budget. And the first thing out of the conservatives' mouth is, no, you're going to hurt security. The defense budget is just loaded with corporate welfare. It has absolutely nothing to do with security. It has to do with being gouged. And the problem is that these defense contractors take the position, well, you know, if you don't like it, you can go somewhere else. And a lot of times their attitude is, well, where are you going to go?
The ultimate public-private partnership.
Absolutely.
Let's take a quick break right back after this with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. It's money that matters in the USA.
Money that matters. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Eric Cantors of the world. They've got nice, pretty smiles, don't they? While they're taking away any hope to help some of those folks. I don't know how you wake up in the morning and have that kind of a thought process. Now, yeah, we're just not going to help them. You know, tough. Or we're going to need to take it from someone else. You're going to take it from those other poor people. We need cuts to education. We need cuts to all that other stuff.
Well, I think you hit on a big reason why a lot of people don't like or don't trust politicians. They get this beltway mentality, and the disconnect between life as it really is and their positions is just... Wow, it's just thousands of miles apart.
So the question then becomes is how do you make the wealthy more philanthropic? You know, right now what should be happening in the conservative world is that these wealthy people who, you know, they're patriotic and they care about their country, they should just be opening their checkbooks and saying, yes, we will help because we are philanthropic. It's not happening. Why? Because they're okay. It's those people who are harmed. And if you go back and you look at New Orleans, when we were down there, the very wealthy areas were almost, for the most part, they were completely free of damage because they were on higher ground. They weren't the ones in the soup bowl. The people in the soup bowl were the poor people who couldn't afford to get the higher ground. And where the higher ground was, they had hired guns who were keeping them off. And, you know, again, I go back to this idea that we shouldn't have to beg. to help our fellow citizens. We shouldn't have to beg to help rebuild people's homes and rebuild people's lives. We shouldn't have to beg. And maybe we should do like Franklin Roosevelt did. On this day back in 1935, he signed the Wealth Tax Act that increased taxes on the very well-to-do and big businesses while lowering taxes for smaller businesses. Now, understand, raising taxes on some, you have the ability to lower taxes on other. It's public policy. It's managing how you want your country to look. Do we want to be one of the countries in Latin America that has a handful of very, very wealthy and then the rest of us who are basically scrambling in the streets for crumbs? Because that's where we're heading. As the jaws open wider, as the gulf between those who have and those who do not increases, we run that risk. Now, the Wealth Act, this Wealth Tax Act, it raised that top marginal tax rate up to 75% for people who then were making $5 million a year. Imagine, back 1935, there were actually people making $5 million in the heart of the Depression. And you go, at some point, do we not have to say, you know what, hey, times are tough, brother. You got to pitch in. And if you're not going to do it, we'll do it for you. If you're not willing to pitch in, we're willing to pitch it in for you, one way or another. And you go through it, and you look at some of the things that they did. They had a very progressive system. The more you made, the more you paid. The bigger your shoulders, the more you were expected to carry. That's just basic democracy. The big hulking masked guy carries the heavy stuff, and the little tiny woman, she gets to carry the cotton. Or whatever it is that's light. That's just reality. But not in conservative world. No, no. Screw those poor people. If you feed them, they will just multiply. As the guy from South Carolina said. Because his grandmammy taught him. But on every front, this Wealth Tax Act, again, something we can learn from the past on, said, you know what? For the very wealthy, we're gonna tax you a little bit higher than everybody else. In fact, tax rates on corporations was something that they threw into this. They had a 13.25% tax rate on all net income up to $15,000. Anything above $15,000 was taxed at 14.5%. And they had an excess charge. Anything over $2 million, they taxed even higher. Because you know what? You needed the income. You needed the help. It threw in, you know, an opportunity for folks to be philanthropic because, you know what, there are some people who, out of the goodness of their heart, they're going to help. But you know what? A corporation can't deduct more than 5%. They can donate as much as they want, but 5% is all they're going to get off. And there were a whole bunch of really great things, excess profit taxes, which said, look, you know, in the insurance industry, if you're making a profit in excess of 8 to 12%, we're going to tax you on that. And if you go above that, we're going to tax even more. Stop and think about health insurance right now. How much is the health insurance industry above that 8 to 12%? Some of the numbers I've seen have put them in the 20% range. Something we could use, I don't know, something we can use again. Also, they went in and got some language in there for people who want to avoid the inheritance tax. And they said, you know, if you're going to cheat on the inheritance tax, by creating some corporate entity or creating something to avoid it, we're going to tax the whole thing at 80%.
Beautiful.
It was an incentive for people to pay their taxes.
And out of that era, Rick, and you know, you didn't touch on it, but I think it's key. Out of that era, a lot of the rich people, what did they do? They set up trust, which even today, 70, 80 years later, are benefiting local communities and the nation. They figured out, and this is one thing that the conservatives will never admit, the wealthy have all, they're wealthy because they know how to play the system. And the very, very wealthy can hire very, very experts in the field that'll tell them where to put their money and limit their taxes. And they were told, hey, you want to limit your taxes under the present system? You set up a trust, and that's exactly what they did. And those trusts funded universities, they funded libraries, they funded all kinds of things that have benefited society to this day. And I asked the conservatives, aren't we a better nation for it? I believe we were and are.
Well, again, that's all because of the progressive income tax. This idea of cutting taxes down to the bone, and we're gonna have another discussion like we had during the tax reform bill of 86, where they cut off loopholes for the very wealthy, they cut off loopholes for corporations to make sure that they paid a little bit higher rates, and for a short period of time they will. But what are they going to take from the middle class? What are they going to take from the working class? What are they going to take from the poor? Is Social Security on the table? And those are questions that have to be answered. And if any of that is, I'm telling you, I'm not in favor of it. Because once they take from us, once they take from the generations of people who have fought for retirement security or health insurance in old age, once they start taking Medicare and Social Security away, you don't get that stuff back. Now, they get their loopholes back because they can hire armies of lobbyists. They can hire armies of tax attorneys and armies of folks to advocate on their behalf. How many Social Security recipients have lobbyists? How many workers have lobbyists? How many people in the audience have a lobbyist they can pick up the phone and say, you know what, I would sure like to, if that that credit card interest I pay to the bank every month, if I could deduct that. You know, like we used to before the tax reform bill of 86, before they began taxing unemployment benefits. Again, you never lose that. All those slaps in the face that we've gotten over the years, those things that used to benefit you and me, have been taken away. That was the low-lying fruit for them. We don't care that. Nothing for them. And I look at this thing with the hurricane. I mean, it's unthinkable that these folks would take this position. And maybe you've got a good rationale for it. I had someone explain to me after the hurricane, after the tornadoes, that we shouldn't be helping any of those people. We should give them money and make them move somewhere else. All of those areas that have been hit by tornadoes, all of the areas that have been hit by hurricanes, all of this, we should just leave abandoned. And if you want to live there, you live there at your own risk. That was my conservative friend's op. That was his idea. And, you know, maybe that's the direction we need to start talking about. If we're not going to help our neighbors in times of need, if we're going to continue to say, you know what, we're not going to help them, maybe we need to talk about that. But all I keep hearing the Republicans saying that we're broke, man. And I'm looking at Wall Street. I'm looking at these big boats being built. I'm looking at these gated communities. I'm looking at Mitt Romney adding on to his vacation house. Doesn't seem broke to me. I'm looking at all this money that's being made by these gamblers on Wall Street, and I'm going, doesn't seem broke to me. I don't see the lights going out in Vegas. I don't see the lights going out down there at Hollywood Casino. I don't see that. What I do see is I see folks struggling to make ends meet. And all I hear from my friends on the right is, well, you know, we need to tighten the belt. We need to make sure that we can sacrifice. Because we're all in this together, remember. Except for the very wealthy who have been doing very well all these years. Except for those people in Vermont and New York and North Carolina who need help. Can't help them. Not working. I mean, really, I'm hoping there are some rational people who are thinking about the messaging that's going into this, that they don't care. And to me, there's some pathology there. There is something amazing about that. I look at Paul Ryan, a guy whose father died when he was a young man, collected the survivor benefit from Social Security. One of the things he wants to do is slam the door on the next person like him down the road. My children, your children, because he benefited from it. I mean, it's just mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Stephen Singizer. He's a contributing editor over at Daily Kos, and talk a little bit about what's going on in Wisconsin, what's going on with teachers. Also, Michelle Bachmann, again, the minimum wage thing is beautiful. How do we create jobs? Get rid of that minimum wage, that pesky minimum wage. Let those workers work for a dollar. That will create jobs. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I got the
to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says in many ways the U.S. has lost ground since Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was alive. Jesse Russell reports.
This weekend, Washington, D.C. played host to the National Symposium on Jobs, Justice, and the American Dream. The symposium was held at the headquarters for the AFL-CIO and was intended to coincide with the unveiling of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. The dedication of the King Memorial was originally scheduled for Sunday, but due to Hurricane Irene, it was postponed. The symposium still went on as scheduled. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka spoke at the symposium. He said, over the last few years, the United States has lost ground on achievements reached during King's lifetime. He noted the national unemployment rate is twice what it was when King marched on Washington, D.C.
We live in a country less economically equal than in Dr. King's time. Jobs are scarcer. It's harder to go to college. And the right to a voice on the job has largely been taken away from America's workers.
The new date for the official dedication of the King Memorial will be in September or October.
Santos Castaneda is back to work at a warehouse in Chino, California, after being fired last week for passing out leaflets promoting a safe workplace. Castaneda says he was fired moments after speaking out at a rally urging NFI Industries to correct workplace abuses. Warehouse Workers United's Shaharier Couchy says that Castaneda was reinstated after unfair labor practices were charged and thousands signed a petition urging Walmart and NFI Industries to rehire the worker activist.
Probably somebody above, either way, at the company or even at the retail level, said, you have to fix this because clearly it was so blatant that, especially to do it in front of a community picket, a group of over 150 community members, clergy, leaders, to do that right in front of us while we were there supporting these workers, you know, it's kind of a thumb in the eye to all those folks who did come out. Workers are always taking a risk to stand up and speak up for their rights, but there also is a clear benefit. If you stand up with a group, you join up with your coworkers, you join up with your colleagues and do it together, there's a better chance that you'll be able to be protected because there's strength in numbers.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Everything's raisin, but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hazes. Everything's raisin, but the weight is.
You know, the truth of the matter is if the Republicans have their way, the wages will all be a buck an hour. The wages will be something, you know, we'll work for food. That's the wage for the day. And I don't think they're shy about saying that. They want the market wage, which is if you have enough, you overflow the labor pool, poverty. And you look at what's going on in Wisconsin. I mean, they have, just, In a very short amount of time, undone generations of work by labor people and by workers in that state. And it's, to me, just absolutely amazing what's going on there. That's why I've asked Stephen Singheiser. He's a contributing editor over at Daily Kos. He's also a teacher and a coach. He's been doing that since 1996. So he's a perfect person to talk to about what's going on with their education cuts there in Wisconsin. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, glad to be with you.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, the cuts have been going on around, across the country here in Pennsylvania, almost $1 billion worth of slash and burn to our education system, and eventually it comes out on the back of the teachers.
Yeah, it really does, and perfect example, you cited Wisconsin in your intro there. Yesterday on Daily Kos, I wrote up a piece where one of the ways they're balancing the budget now is they're going to cut teacher sick days. From one example was they traditionally allotted 10 days of sick days. they're dropping it to 7. What better way to balance the budget than to have teachers deciding whether or not to forfeit hundreds of dollars of their paycheck or to come into work and expose 20, 30, 40 students to illnesses? It's classic Republican budgeting there, I would say.
Well, I mean, again, you know, you look at this and they say, well, the kids come to school and they expose the teacher, so it should be both ways.
Yeah, that's it. It's a good recipe for a public health crisis, I think, as well. Hey, everyone show up sick and we'll let the doctors sort it out, I suppose.
Well, survival of the fittest, Steve.
Yeah, right.
That's how
exactly.
We thin the herd.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely do that. You know, it's one of those things where one of the school board people there said, well, I think they're mimicking the private sector, which is, you know, kind of cracked down on those things. But the difference is, being a teacher, you do live a little bit different lifestyle. One of those things is you're exposed to a variety of people who don't take the greatest precaution in their own health. They'll come to school, you know, wipe their nose on their hand, and then give you a high five on the way out of the classroom door. That happens, you know.
Of course it does. You know, I've got small children. I know that, you know, they're still learning those things, and they sneeze right in your face. Sure, I wouldn't want to be a teacher.
Well, and
I wouldn't want to be
is,
a teacher for a number of reasons. One is I have a hard enough time dealing with the three that I have. Can't imagine a classroom full of 40 or 50 of them. But the other side of it is, look, the beatings that teachers are taking in the media, the assaults that they're taking from politicians and the public, I wouldn't want any part of it.
And I think the scary thing there, Rick, to be honest with you, is I think a lot of people are eventually, maybe not quite yet, but they're going to come to your way of thinking on that, and we're going to lose a generation of potentially great teachers who look at the way they're portrayed in the media, who look at the fact that the paychecks aren't great. No one goes into this profession to get rich, and they're going to look elsewhere, and that's going to be a real tragedy.
You know, I've got a friend who is a retired teacher, and she said, you know, because she lived through the poverty age of being a teacher. She worked to build a union in the place that she worked in, and then she was able to retire with a reasonable pension. And in retrospect, in looking backwards, she said, you know, they really loved me when I was starving. They really loved me when I was depending on little Susie or Johnny to bring that apple in so I would have lunch for that day. But the second I said, you know, I want to buy my own apple, or heaven forbid I would like a pear, that's when everything started to turn.
Well, there was a great poll taken last month by Delta Kappa, which is a teaching organization, and they do it in conjunction with Delt. And one of the things that was amazing to me is something on a level of like 70% of the public gave their teachers of their children A's or B's on their performance. They're doing great work. But when asked whether teaching unions helped or hurt education, twice as many said it hurt as helped. And that dichotomy has always fascinated me. I love teachers, but teachers' unions. Well, what are teacher unions made of? They're made of teachers. And people can't get around that they're one and the same.
Well, I've made that argument myself, because what's happened, the message machine has done a masterful job of divorcing people from their government, you know, people from their unions, teachers from their unions. They've done a masterful job of slicing, dicing, dividing us and pitting us against one another.
And there's a lot of truth in that, and it goes even further. The message machine, when it comes to education, has turned particularly brutal, as you noted. Here's an amazing stat from that very same survey. Something on the order of 80% of people say that they think their schools are doing a fantastic job. But when asked what they thought of education in the country at large, that number dropped, if you can believe this, Rick, to 17%.
Wow.
Now, it's based on what I see versus what I hear. What they see when they see their kids' classrooms is they see good work being done by good public school teachers. But what they hear when they turn on the news is a never-ending array of horrific news, and therefore they are convinced that the system's in crisis, which allows these fraudsters masquerading as reformers to get a lot of traction.
So how much of that do you think, Steve, is the fact that we live in an instantaneous media culture where everything is reported almost as it happens in real time? I mean, because, you know, everyone knows, oh, there's this teacher who's done a bad thing. Fill in the blank. But everyone now knows there's this one teacher, you know, 1,000 miles away that did this thing, and that's the state of education in the country.
I think part of it is definitely that. I think a bigger part of it is that this is a media culture, and has been for quite some time. This is nothing new. that has thrived on conflict. Conflict is infinitely more entertaining than just, hey, here's a bunch of teachers doing good work. It's a lot more interesting to say, oh, there's a crisis, because when there's a crisis, people tune in to see how the crisis gets resolved. So I think there's a real commercial benefit to ginning up concern, because then you can present in a three-part series next week the how we're going to fix it, and that's where the Michelle Rees of the world get traction that they otherwise probably wouldn't deserve.
Right, you know, and to be honest with you, I do this program, and you know, you want that kind of, you know, some kind of conflict news. You want something that's going to grab people and make them pay attention, because you know it's not really great, you know, confrontational radio to say, you know, my teacher's doing a great job, and,
right.
And teachers across the country are working their behinds off for less money, and you got people like Michelle Bachmann, and you've written another great piece over at Daily Kos, which we've linked to as well, about Michelle Bachmann wanting to open up she's open to the fact that we lower the minimum wage, which would fit right in with the teachers. We could have minimum wage teachers.
Well, there's a quote in Laura Clausen's piece today from a superintendent, no, I'm sorry, it was a superintendent, that just horrifies me. He says, oh, now that these teachers don't have collective bargaining rights, it's great. It's so much easier to balance a budget.
Yeah, on their backs. So, again, going back to what my teacher friend said, you know, they loved us when we were living in poverty, depending on those kids to bring apples. Now maybe I'm going to have to send my kids to school with an extra apple to help feed the teacher.
Yeah, you get the education you pay for is the bottom line. And I think that's something that they're going to learn in Wisconsin is when – all of a sudden, those test scores that they value so much there start to dwindle a little bit because their best and brightest in the next generation look at not being able to take sick days even when you're sick because they balance the budget on your back on that. Not being able, as Laura alluded to earlier today, to bring a microwave to school because they're trying to save a couple dollars on electricity. You know, they're going to look at that and go, no thanks, I'd rather go work someplace else. And that's going to be a real sad moment for us. And could have generational effects because we're not going to – you want to talk about quality of education, you get the education you pay for.
Yeah, but here's my problem. You know, I'm looking at this stuff, and with the technology that's coming out, about a month ago I think I read a report out of Korea. In Seoul, they've got computers that are teaching classes. They've got robots that are teaching classes now.
Yeah.
Completely,
we've seen a little bit of that here.
Completely mechanizing.
People advocating Internet learning. I think a lot of the studies have shown, though, at the end of the day, you need a human body in front of you.
But where I'm going with this is, because I've always looked at what's happening to education is they're trying to make it assembly line work, where there are these things called children, these empty vessels where we just pour knowledge into their heads and they regurgitate these facts, and it's an assembly line. And that's what they're trying to make education out to be. It's just an assembly line where these teachers pour this information into these empty vessels, and boom, next one. And we make all these little carbon copies of little fact regurgitators.
And I think the way that you really see that manifested these days is with this notion, which is not necessarily new, but is becoming more and more emphasized, especially at the state government level, of everything you need to know about how a school's performing and how a teacher's performing can be measured by this one test we gave in April or May.
Yep.
And that tells you everything you need to know. And that's scary.
I remember,
because that's not education.
No, it's not. And I remember the first time, it was the beginning of last year when my daughter was tested, and she did extremely poorly, as did every child in her class, because she was being tested on what she was supposed to know at the end of the year. And the whole idea was to be able to show improvement, that from the beginning of the year she knew this, you know, she knew nothing, and by the end of the year we got her up to par. And I said, well, why would you, in a third grader, attack her confidence in that way? Well, we've got to be able to measure. I mean, that's how nuts this whole thing has gotten in my mind.
The end problem is, and a lot of people don't want to accept this, is education is incredibly difficult to quantify. Let me give you just one example. I am, as you noted in your introduction, I think, that I've been a classroom teacher now for 15 years. I'm a U.S. history teacher. So how are you going to show improvement for me? Because the year before mine, they take world history. Well, as you know, a lot of kids may do very poorly in world history because it's not something that's immediate to them and interesting to them,
right.
But they really like U.S. history. So am I the greatest teacher in the world? No, they're essentially two different subjects. They're in the same area, but they're two different subjects.
But it's history.
Yeah, history is history, just like math is math. Although I could tell you that computational math and calculus are quite different because I know how to do one and the despite the best efforts of my calculus teacher, I still don't know how to do the other one.
I hear you. I'm right there with you. You know, and the other part of this, I guess, as a history teacher, are you having to deal, are you closing your ears when you hear Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin try and recite history?
Oh, gosh. You know, what's even scarier to me than their casual relationship with history and government and the Constitution, despite the fact they claim to be constitutionalists, is how quickly their advocates rush to defend them. And that's the part to me that's really scary. Can we, have we lost sight in the society of the ability just to say, yeah, that person got the facts wrong? Well, no, you know, if you look at it from this way, what they really meant was, that's the part to me that just is as a teacher, is frustrating to me. When you get it wrong, you get it wrong.
Absolutely. And that's something that I think we've got to work on. So let me ask you a last question before we wrap this up. You know, in looking at what's going on in Wisconsin and in other states around the country, what has to happen to turn this back around? Or is this just part of the cycle where we're going to have to refight the battles that generations past have had to fight?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think part of it has to be done at the ballot box, and I think that will happen. I do think at some level, particularly at the state legislative level, there is a pretty high amount of buyer's remorse. I think a lot of voters are now kind of realizing, well, this isn't quite what I bargained for. And so I think you will see a little bit of that. But I think the other thing that has to happen is that workers in varying industries have to realize that we could be next. That's where I really applauded the law enforcement community in Wisconsin, who originally, from a lot of that, of those, you know, union busting provisions, they were treated a bit more leniently because their union had endorsed Scott Walker.
Yeah, I think as the fire department, the firefighters did as well, right?
Yeah. They still stood with their colleagues, realizing that, yeah, you may not be going again, you may not be going at me now, but that's no guarantee you're not going to do the same thing to me a year down the line when you want to give another tax cut to your cronies.
Yep.
So I think the people who work for a living have to understand that just because it's not you now, it could be you down the line. And that's one place where that the other side has done a brilliant job of turning groups against one another, where I've had friends of mine who aren't in teaching who say, you know, you guys get 10 sick days. Well, I don't get 10 sick days. Well, the point isn't that I should get fewer sick days because your employer screwed you over. It's we should all get a baseline level of respect from our employers.
Yep. And I wish more people would see it that way, because, you know, to be honest, as I was talking about this, the first thing I thought of when it said you went down to, from 10 sick days down to 7, I was saying the majority of people are going to go, well, I don't get any. Why should they get any? Instead of going, well, how do I get 7 sick days?
Right. And I think that's the approach they want. That's how they've attacked pensions, because the private sector has destroyed their workers' pensions, and now they're now, you know, opportunistic people at the state legislative level are like, well, you teacher, you firefighter, you public worker, why should you get a pension? The guy working at, you know, corporate USA doesn't get the same pension, and that's how they do it. It's divide and conquer. I give them credit. It's a good electoral strategy, but it's not a good strategy for providing for a state or a country.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good policy for running a society. I absolutely agree. Stephen Singheiser, I appreciate the time. Great articles over there at labor.dailycos.com. We've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. I'll take you right to Steve's pieces. Steve, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Hey, anytime. Glad to talk to you.
All right. Look forward to having you back. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.
Don't know much about the science folk. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you find it necessary to declare on national television that, quote, I am a serious person, you're probably not. Meet Michelle Bachmann. She's currently running for president, but suffering a few credibility problems. One is that she keeps creating her own fanciful version of history. For example, she recently bewildered Iowa voters by asserting that the Founding Fathers had magnanimously included every American in the nation's new government. Quote, it didn't matter the color of people's skin, she marveled. It didn't matter whether they were of a higher class or a lower class. It made no difference. Seriously? Indeed, Bachman plowed straight ahead into a fantasy about the founder's glorious work to free the slaves. She insisted that these wealthy, white, slave-owning men, quote, worked tirelessly until slavery was no more in the United States. Seriously. No surprise, then, that the Congresswoman also invents her own personal history. While she unsparingly attacks Washington's spending addiction, she apparently doesn't own a mirror. It turns out that her husband's counseling clinic has received thousands of dollars in state and federal grants. Oh, she dodges, those tax dollars didn't come to us. Seriously? Yes, she explains, the money went to train our clinic's employees, as though that's not a subsidy for their business. Then there is the $260,000 in subsidies for her family's farm. Oh, she dissembled, that went to my father-in-law, adding that I have never gotten a penny from the farm. Seriously? But wait, she's listed as a partner in the farm, and her financial disclosure forms report that, in fact, she has received $105,000 in income from it. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bachman says she wants to take government back. And in all seriousness, it looks like she's already clawing back her piece of it.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
My name is Michelle Bachman. I stand here in the midst of many friends and many family members to announce formally my candidacy for President of the United States.
You gotta love Michelle Bachman. Every time you hear the name, you gotta just applaud. Comic genius. Absolute comic genius. Maybe play a little bit of her theme music. I don't know if you saw this. And again, the radical right, they love to do the coloring book thing, evidently. Do you remember the T-Twits had their little coloring book? Do you remember in fact, I've got a copy of it. Do you remember Talisman Terry, the Fracasaurus? Talisman Energy came out with this coloring book for kids so that they could color in their drilling adventures. And you could see pictures of drilling operations before and after and how wonderful they are. And how, you know, Fracasaurus, who, you know, I guess we just made up, because we're pumping these dangerous chemicals into the ground, and somehow he turned into a dinosaur. I'm not quite sure how that happens. But, you know, hey, good PR. Get those kids. Get them early. We need to indoctrinate our children and get the spin machine in there from day one. You want to talk about one of my biggest complaints about education in this country right now? One of my biggest complaints is we indoctrinate our children to be corporate friendly right from the get-go. My kid was in kindergarten doing, if you read, 10 books, you get a free coupon to go to this restaurant, or you get a free coupon to get this corporate toy, it's amazing. Right from the beginning, these kids are being marketed to. And, Talisman Terry, the Fracasaurus, gotta have that coloring book so that early on they get it in their head that, that drilling, a couple thousand feet into the ground, pumping dangerous chemicals down there and, pulling out resources out of the ground, that's a good thing. And it doesn't harm anything. It's wonderful. We love Fracasaurus. So that when they get older, they think drilling, Fracasaurus. They don't think methane in the water. They don't think pollution. They don't think all of the negative side effects. Just, happy coloring books. Same thing with the T-Twits. They did the same thing. But now another coloring book is out. The really big coloring book company has printed up a bunch of the We Shall Never Forget 9/11, the Kids' Book of Freedom. And you can have your child, You know, you can have your 4 or 5 year old with their box of crayons, laying on the floor, you know, coloring the Twin Towers burning down. They can put the tears in people's eyes as they mourn the survivors. In fact, they can even put the blood, right between the eyes of Osama bin Laden as SEAL Team 6 takes him out. Good, wholesome American, coloring opportunities. Really? Really? This is what our country has come to? The guy who published it, the guy named Wayne Bell, he says that the doodles represent patriotism, a simplistic, honest tool to help educate children on the events of 9/11. I call it propaganda. I call it ridiculous. I call it stupid. But here again, there are some people who say, yep, sign me up for the coloring book, just like they did with Fracasaurus. Fracasaurus, he's your friendly Fracasaurus, Talesman Terry. He's friendly. As is SEAL Team 6 when they shoot Osama bin Laden right in the head, and you can take your crayon and you can make the little color, the little red imprints. And you may say, well, you know, what's the big deal? The big deal is there's a huge movement in this country that would like nothing more than to, as Bush said, we're in the middle of crusades, we're on a crusade. They would love nothing more than to heighten and profit from this Islamophobia, if you will. And the folks over at the Center for American Progress, they recently released a 130-page report titled Fear Incorporated, The Roots of the Islamophobia Network in America. And they pointed out that this network of 7 foundations have come together and funded some $42 million to push these hate groups. Donors Capital Fund came up with, over $20 million. Richard Scaife, his foundation came up with almost $8 million. Lindy and Harry Bradley, their foundation came up with over $5 million. Russell Berry Foundation, over $3 million. You go down the list, the Fairbrook Foundation, Newton and Rochelle Becker Foundation, all of these foundations, very conservative foundations, coming up with over $42 million to fund people like Frank Gaffney, who's the head of the Center for Security Policy, who believes and has said that a mosque that is used to promote a seditious program, which is what Sharia law is, this is not a protected religious practice. That is, in fact, sedition. And we should go after them. Treason! Treason! And you go down the list of these crazy people, and really, they're the folks throwing the bombs out there. And I look at our media culture in this country, where nonsense leads, where the cute little blonde missing in Aruba, that's the story that focuses our attention away from every other debate, away from the war, away from everything. It's the shiny thing in the room. And look, do you really think the media in this country is going to accurately report the news? Here, to make my point, I look at the Miami Herald. This was published in the pages of the Miami Herald, actually on their pages. Miami. The Miami Herald is cutting more jobs. In an email Monday, Herald President David Landsberg told the staff that the company's efforts to develop new revenue streams aren't enough to offset prolonged revenue declines. It goes on to say that, you know, they're going to be cutting a whole bunch of employees and all of this stuff. In the Miami Herald newspaper, written by the Associated Press. Are you telling me they have no staff left to write their own story? That happened to them? They didn't have to leave the building. But this is what our media has turned into. Scary, scary times, my friends. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Radio of, for, and by Smith Show.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
My name is Precious, and I help people with mental illnesses live better lives. I work for you, the taxpayers, as a mental health case manager. People with mental illnesses can hold jobs, pay taxes, and provide for themselves. But many of them need help from social workers like me to reach their full potential. Imagine if you or someone you love needed that kind of help and had to go on a waiting list for 7 years. That's what 10 years of budget cuts have already done to mental health caseloads in our state. I know these are tough economic times. But without support services, some individuals get worse and can be a danger to themselves and their communities. And that costs all of us much more in the long run. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they vote to increase funding for programs that help people with mental illnesses lead full lives.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you've got any questions, comments, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And you look around the country, you're starting to see a lot of these representatives caving on the call of, hey, you need to have some town hall meetings, man. You need to get out and meet with your constituents. And I look at this guy from Ohio, this Steve Chabot, who you may remember him. He's the guy who said, you know, no, you can't videotape us, and had the police actually snatch video cameras away from the constituents. Well, yesterday he held another town hall. This time cameras were allowed. And you look around the country and people, right here in Pennsylvania, Pat Toomey's gonna have some town halls. Granted, they're in Potter County, which I don't even know if there are any people really that live there. But they're having these things, and people are coming out. So this is a win for folks. This is a win, I think. And you look up north, up the road from us, that Lou Barlotta, the guy the Tea Party guy, there's some folks hounding him, and I've got Tommy on the line to help talk a bit about that. Tommy, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
I guess you guys have been following Lou Barlotta around, trying to get him to meet with you guys?
Well, yeah, it took several months of hounding. First started on the phone, trying to get just a meeting, being put off by his staff, repeatedly. You know, finally got to the point to where when he actually had a public appearance at a Chamber of Commerce event that was closed to the public, but he at least had to get out of his car and walk into the building, we were able to, get his attention. We'll leave it at that. And, you know, of course, when pushed up against the wall, certainly most of these guys don't want to, you know, appear to be, unwilling to meet. So he, in front of his district director, he threw her in front of the bus and said, oh, absolutely, I'll meet with you guys, while she had the look of Satan on her face. It was quite funny.
Well, it is. I mean, and the reality is, you know, when you're dealing with your constituency, you got to make yourself available. And this is where I think the Tea Party people thought, you know, hey, our people are going to protect us. This will, the things that we did to, the Democrats back in 2010 could never possibly happen to us. And look, now the tables have turned a little bit.
Well, going back to, to the whole Tea Party, you know, which of course, you know, we all know was a corporate backed Koch brothers adventure, but they took a page out of a lot of the things that activists did in the late 60s, early 70s, as far as getting their attention. I mean, they took really really used a lot of the things that we did back, not me because I was too young, but they literally used that against a lot of well-meaning people. And And then, of course, now it's they're in control, so to speak. Now it's time for them to get their blowback. They don't like it very much when it's used against them. It's funny how it changes, and it's so predictable with elected officials. Barletta, he made a big issue out of the fact that Paul Kanjorski refused to have town hall meetings. And then now that he's in Paul Kanjorski's position, now all of a sudden he doesn't want to have town hall meetings for the same reason that Kanjorski didn't want to.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
It is. It's hysterical. And I like some of the ideas that were coming out while he was refusing to meet. My favorite being having a cardboard cutout and actually interviewing a cardboard cutout. Because even in person, I think that's probably the response you're going to get anyway. But it would have been funnier with the cardboard cutout.
But here's the thing about Lou, and I he's an interesting character. He's obviously spent a lot of money on dental work. He's a good-looking guy, and he likes to appear and wants to be. I think that deep down inside, this man really wants to be liked. He likes posing for pictures, smiling with people. This is not Tom Marino. This is not some of the other denizens of the right wing of the Republican Party who revel in hatred. So I think to a certain degree, I think he's somewhat and I'm not a psychologist, but I think he's actually concerned by the fact that so many of the constituents and people in his district are not happy with him.
Need to please on a certain level.
What it means is that you got to keep the pressure up. You got to let these people know that what they're doing is not approved of, and just keep the message just has to continuously have to be driven home, and it has to filter down not just to those of us who are at the forefront of the battle, but as it filters down to our neighbors and to the people in our communities who are obviously all affected by the things these guys do, these men and women do in Congress. And, as they all start waking up to what's being done to them on a daily basis, then you got a movement.
Yep. And some other good messaging I wanted to talk about. I guess you guys had an event this evening with the J1 students from down here in Hershey, the workers who are, basically here being exploited. I guess you had one part of the kitchen table tour took its way up to the Wilkes-Barre area. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened to that?
Well, we were very, aware of what was going on, with the Excel and Hershey and what was going on down there in that part of the state. But it didn't get an incredible amount of play up here, just because, you get state news here, but most of it centers around what the state legislature is up to or not up to, or what the governor did or. So I thought, and many other people thought it was a really good idea to bring them up here so that we could, just let the folks in Northeast Pennsylvania know what was going on with this program and how these wonderful, I hate to say kids, young adults is probably more appropriate, young men and women who came here with the idea that they were going to get a bona fide American experience. And something that was said today by A.J. Marine, he said that, explaining that this program originally was developed during the Cold War to bring young students, young men and women from Eastern Europe who were, behind the Iron Curtain, to bring them over to the United States to give them an idea and a taste of American life. And, you know, so that they would go back to their countries and talk about what a wonderful country and what a great way of life we had here.
Yeah, and once you actually know somebody, it's a lot more difficult to push the button and blow them up.
Well, exactly. And then what happened, though, is, you know, when the Berlin Wall fell and when, Soviet Union was dissolved, these programs stayed in place, but the purpose of these programs changed. Instead of giving them the American experience, it was, let's see, we can exploit these young men and women and get cheap labor out of them and also suck money out of them and their families because they pay an awful lot of money to come over here. And, one of the things that were talked about during this event, and, you know, they had an event at Public Square in Wilkes-Barre and met a lot of people there. And then we went back to the United Steelworkers headquarters in Wilkes-Barre, and they got Old Forge pizza and pierogies and soda and cake and got to meet some labor leaders and one retired labor leader here in the area, Gil Cooney, who had some incredible stories to tell them. And so they felt that their struggles and things that they go through were something that was shared over here. And one of the things that was brought up by Jane Wakis, who teaches labor history and down at Penn State Hazleton, was that, you know, one of her great grandfathers was living in Eastern Europe and was approached by recruiters and was promised that they went over to the United States that there was great opportunity and great life. Well, when he got over here, he was basically given a helmet, a lamp, and a pick and a thing of dynamite and said, go down and start digging coal.
Right.
that wasn't what he was promised by the recruiter.
So the more things change, the more they kind of say the same.
Exactly. And of course, a number of the young men and women were from, I noticed one was from Turkey, several were from the Ukraine, a couple from South Korea. They really identified with the stories and they're all future leaders in their country. In fact, the Ukrainian girl that I saw who spoke for them, she intends to go into journalism, if she isn't already studying it. And I see her, I wouldn't be surprised in a few years to turn on CNN International and I'll see her pretty face right there in the camera with the CNN microphone because she's, you know, when you see young people with, who really jump out at you with tremendous talent and what they learned over here, hopefully, I think what we maybe salvaged out of this horrible thing that happened to them was that they'll leave here, go back to their countries in a few weeks, and they'll have some nice things to say. They had some bad experiences, true, but in the end, a lot of really good people stepped up to help them. And hopefully that's what they'll take back with them to their home countries.
That's an excellent point. Let me ask you some of the reaction of the people that watched this unfold, not necessarily the folks in your group, but maybe the people on the square, folks that you've talked to. What kind of reaction are you getting from people in your area up there?
Well, I heard a few, I was walking by a picnic table and there were some folks sitting there that were not part of it, but were just happened to be there. And I overheard somebody say, what's going on over there? And they said, yeah, those are the kids from the foreign countries that were turned into slaves at Hershey. You know, they were used for slave labor.
Wow.
And then the other person said, oh, really? Oh my. You know, like it was, they were aghast.
And again, I go back to the fact that I think right from the start of this, Hershey did everything that they could do to screw this up and make it about them. They could have nipped this in the bud very easily.
I mean, I'm not being 100% knowledgeable about all the particulars. I think there were failures all the way down the line. I mean, in my opinion, the State Department needs to, you know, this is a program they oversee. This is something that they should be involved in overseeing and watching these people. Obviously, the agencies that get the sweetheart deals to bring these children, these kids over here. They're the ones, you know, that are truly, I mean, they're the ones profiting a lot off of this. And then of course the companies, they have the corporations have a responsibility to make sure that their vendors are doing the right thing. And what Hershey, where Hershey failed is they just turned a blind eye to everything and just let it go on. And, you know, so they're getting a little bit of bad publicity out of it, as they should, because, you know, when I've always learned this, if something happens on your watch and you're in charge or you're the one paying, you're the one that's responsible, and you have to be held accountable.
Yep, I absolutely agree. You good thing up there today. Keep up the good work there, Tommy. I appreciate the information, and I look forward to talking to you again.
All right, thanks, Rick.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We were a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. Yeah, I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Borowitz reports over at the Borowitz Report. Publishing circles were abuzz today with the news that the new memoir of former Vice President Dick Cheney featured a foreword by an unusual contributor. Yes, Satan himself. In the introduction, the Prince of Darkness said he rarely reads political memoirs, but made an exception in this case for Mr. Cheney because we'd worked so closely together in the past. When he began to read the Cheney manuscript, however, the Lord of Misrule said he was surprised by what he found. The Prince of Darkness said, quite honestly, I couldn't put it down. It was almost like a book I would have written myself. In what could be construed as minor criticism of the book, Satan admitted that he was miffed that Mr. Cheney took total credit for the idea of invading Iraq, but added, we were working so closely, such close collaborators at the time, it may be hard for Dick to remember whose idea was whose. Half the time we were finishing each other's sentences. While Satan said he is unlikely to make it a habit of writing introductions to books, he said he could foresee making another exception in the future. He says, I've heard Rupert Murdoch is working on his memoir. Elsewhere, after Representative Michelle Bachmann said God created last week's hurricane and earthquake to punish America, God issued this rebuttal, actually, that's why I created Michelle Bachmann. So there you go. And speaking of Michelle Bachmann, evidently she's going to have her own very own book, a new memoir that I'm hoping nobody will read. She then joins the group of Mitt Romney, who has his, and, of course, Rick Perry, who has his. Now Michelle, she will join the trio there of future bargain bin book club people. So there you go. Hold off a couple of weeks. Should be in the bargain bin very, very soon, along with the Christine O'Donnell book, which evidently nobody is reading. Here's a news flash. Nobody cares. I think if she would have written a book about self-love, something that she abhors, I think people would have gravitated toward that. Maybe a how-to manual.
Ooh. Ooh.
But not quite into it. But anyway, Bachmann said she's going to unveil her vision for America's future and talk about, when she was a tax attorney, a wife, a mother, and of course a foster mother, because and good for her, got to give her credit, 7.5 years being a foster parent, but you got to play that up. And that's a good talking point.
According to her, she raised 35 foster children.
That was 23.
23?
Yeah.
I thought it was 35. Okay.
300. For
the
political
point is... The term raised, that's a big term. Of course, she'd like to give you the impression that, she...
Took them from birth.
She was their mother for years and years and years and kept in touch with them and was a huge influence in their life. When that's not quite...
They all come over for Christmas and have a big group hug.
That's not exactly the total
look,
truth.
But at the end of it, I'm not taking anything away from her. We need more people like that. We need more loving families. I gotta wonder, in looking at this woman and especially the guy she's married to with the whole gay therapy thing and that whole twisted view, did they do more harm than good? Just what it is. Anyway, the Associated Press reported Monday at the press club in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rick Perry said, quote, you won't have stimulus program under a Perry presidency. Nope, not going to do it. You won't spend all the money. He added that the nation's entrepreneurial spirit would get America working again. Going to get him working again. In fact, he pledged to reform the tax code to light on the job craters. Got to be light on them. A little bit light. And again, I listen to that and I go, so basically you've already handcuffed yourself into dealing with any future problems because you're dumb. And I guess the answer is yes. Also on Monday, Perry called for a muscular foreign policy. He was talking to the folks at the Veterans of the Foreign Wars, their convention in San Antonio. And he said, as the 10th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11, as that approaches, we must renew our commitment to taking the fight to the enemy. I take it to them. Stick it to them. Go, go, go. Wherever they are, before they strike at home. So I guess, this idea that we're going to have now bigger military spending, while we can't raise the debt ceiling and we can't take care of the people here at home who are struggling from the disaster, somehow he's just going to pull that out of thin air. And, of course, today... You gotta love him. He was attacking Obama and the administration's job policies, and saying that it's dumb policy. And it appears that Perry is suffering from rabbit ears because there was an article earlier in the week that asked the question: is Rick Perry dumb? And immediately he fired back on Sean Hannity's show is, what's dumb? What's dumb is overseeing an economy that's lost millions of jobs. That's dumb. How do you do that? I'm not quite getting that. But here again, what you're getting out of Perry is another one of these right-wing anti-intellectual frames. You know, because right now Obama's sitting around and he's got his economic advisors and he's trying to figure out, you know, how do we deal with this in a way that's going to appease Wall Street, in a way that's going to appease the big corporations who are sitting on piles of cash while still creating jobs to help get the economy moving again. Because understand, you know, the Wall Street people, they want it all, man. They want deregulation. They want more tax cuts. They want to control this country. So Perry, again, with this whole anti-intellectual frame, says of Obama's economic advisors, they're very intellectual, very smart. But what he does not have is wise men and women around him. Doesn't have wise people, none of them. He's listened to all this academics, all these academics around him, plenty of smart people, but nobody has wisdom. And again, this whole anti-intellectual thing, where these people who are, you know, who are smart folks, they don't know as much as he does. Because, you know, he's going to get in there, get his D in economics. He's going to get his D on.
Well, you know, you talk about Wall Street, and, you know, I'm dead serious when I say this. I have to believe that there's people in Wall Street that look at the governor of Texas and look at Michelle Bachmann and say, I don't know if we can trust this person. They look at their positions on raising the debt ceiling. You look at some of their economic conditions. They gotta be looking at themselves, thinking to themselves, are these people really qualified? Are these the people we want to run? And I know they have some deep philosophical differences with Obama, but on a certain level, they agree with Obama.
Well, because Obama's giving them everything that they could want. Yeah, I agree with you there. But here's the thing. Both Bachmann and Perry, I think, are very pliable. I think once you get them in the office, okay, whatever you want. We're going to follow the ideology. Just tell me what it is. You know, and that's kind of where I see this all going. The more I listened to Rick Perry, I didn't realize how bad he would come off. He's actually making George W. Bush sound intelligent to me. Like, you know, like a Rhodes Scholar. That kind of gap in the intelligence.
Rhodes Scholar.
Yes. I mean, we're talking different, whole different planes, and not just in Texas. But, you know, he's still the number one in the poll right now. I mean, granted, he is flavor of the month. And if Chris Christie jumps in, he will skyrocket right to the top.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, we got trouble. Other than the fact that, you know, the prediction came out and that this guy's never been wrong, that Obama will win. Now, that's going to upset a lot of liberals and a lot of people on the left who look at Obama and say there have been so many missed opportunities. And while I would agree, there's a lot more that we can do, and I would rather have him, honestly, that we can maybe shift and maybe mold, maybe push it one way or another, than someone like Perry, who we have no opportunity at, or someone like Bachmann, who won't even talk to you, or someone like the rest of the radical right, you know, the whole cabal of them, because there isn't much that separates them. I mean, Huntsman seems to be the most rational, but he doesn't stand a snowball's chance. And the rest of the field, they're trying to out-crazy each other. Oh, no, I'm crazier than he is. No, I'm crazier than she is. One saying one nutty thing after another.
Well, the irony is even Romney now, I think over the weekend, he went to a Tea Party gathering. I mean, he can pretty much promise them anything they want, and he's not going to get their support, because the Tea Party, for the most part, has already decided. They're going with the two top candidates right now. Michelle Bachmann and the governor of Texas right now. And I think that's going to hold true. I don't think there's any way that the Tea Party is going to back Romney.
And the problem is you're not going to get out of the primary. Romney, I think, would have the best chance of winning. Because I think he's more moderate. I think he would pull some of the independents. If they put up a radical, I just don't see the independents in this country going with a radical. It may be easy to win the Republican primary, which I'm hoping happens. You know, I'm hoping Michelle Bachmann wins. I would love nothing more than a Bachmann-Palin race. And there's some people who are saying Palin's going to jump into the mix here sometime after Labor Day, maybe the end of September, you know, to kind of increase her brand. But if she does jump into this and she loses, her brand is now damaged. I think she stays out of it. I think she almost has to. because there's no upside to this, because she can't win. She's filling the same place that Bachman is, even though Bachman's kind of screwing herself by playing this diva role, not actually talking to people, just giving her speeches and running. There has to be a moment where you go, we're going to do this stuff. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says in many ways the U.S. has lost ground since Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was alive. Jesse Russell reports.
This weekend, Washington, D.C. played host to the National Symposium on Jobs, Justice, and the American Dream. The symposium was held at the headquarters for the AFL-CIO and was intended to coincide with the unveiling of the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. The dedication of the King Memorial was originally scheduled for Sunday, but due to Hurricane Irene, it was postponed. The symposium still went on as scheduled. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka spoke at the symposium. He said, over the last few years, the United States has lost ground on achievements reached during King's lifetime. He noted the national unemployment rate is twice what it was when King marched on Washington, D.C.
We live in a country less economically equal than in Dr. King's time. Jobs are scarcer. It's harder to go to college. And the right to a voice on the job has largely been taken away from America's workers.
The new date for the official dedication of the King Memorial will be in September or October.
Santos Castaneda is back to work at a warehouse in Chino, California, after being fired last week for passing out leaflets promoting a safe workplace. Castaneda says he was fired moments after speaking out at a rally urging NFI Industries to correct workplace abuses. Warehouse Workers United's Shaharier Couchy says that Castaneda was reinstated after unfair labor practices were charged and thousands signed a petition urging Walmart and NFI Industries to rehire the worker activist.
Probably somebody above, either where at the company or even at the retail level, said, you have to fix this because clearly it was so blatant that, especially to do it in front of a community picket, a group of over 150 community members, clergy, leaders, to do that right in front of us while we were there supporting these workers. You know, it's kind of a thumb in the eye to all those folks who did come out. Workers are always taking a risk to stand up and speak up for their rights, but there also is a clear benefit. If you stand up with a group, you join up with your coworkers, you join up with your colleagues and do it together, there's a better chance that you'll be able to be protected because there's strength in numbers.
This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association and by AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. This is What Democracy Looks Like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Like the end of the WIN clip, they have that call from Wisconsin. This is what democracy looks like. You know, under that heading, I guess you could change that a little bit and say this is what a corporatocracy looks like. ABC News. We were tweeted this evening by Ponsier. ABC News Tonight. They write did a fluff piece on the health benefits of chocolate, featuring many Hershey images. Interesting timing with the J1 flap. And I don't know how many stories ABC News has done in highlighting the fact that this has happened, that these workers were being screwed like this. But it's nice to see them, you know bowing to the corporate masters and you know, doing that nice fluff piece. Because my wife will be thrilled to know that there are health benefits associated with chocolate. And, of course, you, Jake, you should live forever with all the chocolate that you've eaten. Forever.
I've had a few in my time.
A few. Mister, I had mounds of wrappers in front of me. A few. I'll multiply that by 1,000, and then we'll talk.
I think you're referring specifically to Nutrageous.
Yeah, well.
One of my favorites. I've since been informed by my doctor that too many peanuts in that salt is not good for me, so I've, for the most part, been listening, believe it or not.
Well, there you go. Our stat of the day comes from the folks over at the Too Much Online blog. They write, who says corporate America isn't hiring? General Electric, according to Reuters tax analyst David K. Johnston, noted last week, now has nearly 1,000 staffers in its tax department and spent another $39.3 million on lobbyists. Thanks to all of their labor, GE over the last 10 years has only paid an average of 9.4% of its profits in federal income tax. Their CEO, GE's CEO Jeffrey Immelt, last year took home $15.2 million. So you stop, think about it. GE is creating jobs. Those lobbyist jobs, those tax avoidance jobs, those are good paying jobs. Basically screwing you and me. So there you go. How many people are already, I gotta be honest, I'm kind of getting tired of coming here night after night, pointing out the fact that another conservative Republican, has done something, in a hypocritical fashion. There's a Puerto Rico state senator, his name's Roberto Arango. Turns out the good conservative lawmaker, had taken a shirtless photograph of himself that appeared on the hookup app Grindr, the hookup app for men, may I point out, because, if you're interested in, hooking up with another guy, evidently Grindr is your site. So here he is, a picture with him, with the iPhone obscuring his face a little bit. But then I guess, according to the news report, you go a little bit further into the app where there are pictures of him, displaying the goods from the backside, if you will. I don't even know how you make that saying for radio. You get the picture. But there he is advertising the goods. And again, this is another one of these guys married with kids. Voted for Resolution 99 in Puerto Rico, blocking any attempts to legalize gay marriage there. And here he is, all I can say is advertising the goods. So there you go. You let your mind work. And, another one of these hypocrites, speaking of Hershey, probably not that just not going there, just plain nuts. There's this guy who's running for Congress in Connecticut's 5th district. His name is Mike Williams. Mike Williams is a member of the LGBT community, and he said he wanted to get into politics to help be a role model for underprivileged children, not just lesbian, gay, bisexual or transgender children, but all kids in Connecticut. So they have the same opportunities as everyone else. And that's a laudable fact. But it turns out that his significant other, his partner, mate, whatever you want to call him, evidently is of Dutch descent. And he's here on a work visa. I guess he lost his job. Now he's being deported. So what they're saying is, these guys have been together for some time. They're considered married. They want to do the whole thing. They can't get married. Thanks to the Defense of Marriage Act, they're going to evidently deport this guy, even though, a bunch of people are saying, that's not a priority for us. So you look again, to me, it just makes no sense to have to worry about what other people are doing. I don't care if they get married. In fact, they should get married. I want, if marriage is a stabilizing force, and this is something that, again, understand, this is not my issue. I look at this from the outside and I go, you know, how ignorant are we that we're going to tell two people that care about each other that you cannot have a bond beyond, you know, a legal contract, that you can't have this marriage bond that other human beings can have. And I love what the right says. You know, marriage is the foundation of, it's the foundation of our society. Well, if that's the case, don't you want to have stable people having stable relationships? I do. I think it's only rational. And the other part of this is I really don't care what they do. Let them alone. Where's this libertarian movement in the Republican Party? Where's this get government out of my life? You know, this is what gets me. You know, the Republicans like to talk, well, they're anti-government. They're not really anti-government. They're anti-government helping people, yes. They definitely want to use government to get in the middle of your life. They want government to enforce their rules, their corporate profits. They want government to enforce all of the things that they want. They want to be in your bedroom. They want to be in your personal life. They want to be up in your business. But heaven forbid that we should ask the very wealthy and corporations, you know, maybe just to kick in a little bit to make sure that the children that we are being forced to, you know, to pump out, that they have a chance. Yeah, just a thought. Or am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. You're absolutely not wrong. I'm amazed at some people who call themselves libertarians and yet what comes out of their mouth is the old conservative line. Well, you know, they're helping to ruin the sanctity of marriage. You mean that vow between two people that now, according to latest statistics, one out of every two couples who take that holy vow get a divorce? Is that what they're referring to? You know, that gay couple, like that gay couple living down the street is doing that to all these marriages. It just amazes me.
I love that argument. And anytime I hear that, I think of the guy I used to work with who had a wife and kid, two kids here in Pennsylvania, had a girlfriend and a kid up in Massachusetts, and he would split time between both houses. And he gave me that BS line. Those two queers there, they're going to ruin the sanctity of my marriage. The girlfriend and the kid, no, that's not going to screw it up. No. Two people who you don't know, who have no contact with you whatsoever, that somehow, magically, are going to destroy the whole thing. The whole house, all the bricks falling off the house. It's just ludicrous. But here again, you know, this lack of tolerance, this lack of understanding. Look, you know, I'm pretty forgiving when it comes to what people want to do within the confines of their home. As long as, you know, it's not with children or animals, and, you know, some people like monkeys, you know, do what you got to do. They can defend themselves. Stay out of people's lives. That's where I have this libertarian streak, and I will agree with Ron Paul on some things. There are things that government should not be involved in. Mm-hmm. My bedroom is one of them. Get out of my life.
Well, you know, some of what they say, you know, we were talking about this stupidity about gays are ruining marriages. It gives them a reason to hate. It gives them a reason to hate, and they'll have to come out and say, well, I hate those people, you know, those queers and those gay people, I hate them. They do hate them, but this is just another way to express that hate.
I don't. You know, you do what you got to do. Sometimes a little prancy and not too thrilled about that, but you do what you got to do, brother.
Prancy.
Whatever, you know, hey, little, okay. Whatever. You know, and I look at these gay pride parades, and I look at some of how they dress, and I go, you're not helping yourself. You're not helping the cause. Put some clothes on. But, you know, it kind of just shows how far we've gone in this country, where the message has gone. And I look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who yesterday was giving a speech at Southern Methodist University. You know what else Southern Methodist University is famous for?
Yeah, football scandal.
Well, you and football.
Well, it got death penalty. It's one of the few ever, but that's just me and my sports.
Yeah, well, you know,
background.
That's where the coloring books are at. That's where my pet goat is. That's where the very hungry caterpillar's at. That's where all the, that's where the Bush Library is. That's where the pop-up books are. Come on, you should know this.
Yes, okay, it's bringing back.
The biggest collection of pop-up books. But that's where the Bush Library is. Anyway, she was giving a speech to about 2,000 students there as part of their lecture series with the Dedman School of Law. And, you know, she was saying, look, you know, the reality is there's no way I could be confirmed given the climate today. And the reality is she worked as a civil rights attorney. She worked, for women's rights. She did work for the ACLU. And, back when she was going through her mock hearings, back during the Clinton years, she said, you're not going to get me to say anything bad about the ACLU. She said today, just having a connection to them is enough to disqualify anybody from being appointed to the Supreme Court because we've moved that much to the extreme right. Now, look, there are things that the ACLU does that sometimes you go, well, I don't know that I agree with that. And that's a good thing. Because they're, to me, the defender of the Constitution, whether you like it or not. They're the defender of free speech in this country, whether you like it or not. Yes. And for me, the reason you vote for Obama in 2012, the reason I'm voting for Obama, she's 78 years old. She's the oldest member on the Supreme Court. Anthony Kennedy, not much younger. That's the reason. And that's why we're going to see a whole boatload of money going in after him. Just part of it. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
If you find it necessary to declare on national television that, quote, I am a serious person, you're probably not. Meet Michelle Bachmann. She's currently running for president, but suffering a few credibility problems. One is that she keeps creating her own fanciful version of history. For example, she recently bewildered Iowa voters by asserting that the founding fathers had magnanimously included every American in the nation's new government. Quote, it didn't matter the color of people's skin, she marveled. It didn't matter whether they were of a higher class or a lower class. It made no difference. Seriously? Indeed, Bachmann plowed straight ahead into a fantasy about the founders' glorious work to free the slaves. She insisted that these wealthy, white, slave-owning men, quote, worked tirelessly until slavery was no more in the United States. Seriously? No surprise, then, that the Congresswoman also invents her own personal history. While she unsparingly attacks Washington's spending addiction, she apparently doesn't own a mirror. It turns out that her husband's counseling clinic has received thousands of dollars in state and federal grants. Oh, she dodges, those tax dollars didn't come to us. Seriously? Yes, she explains, the money went to train our clinic's employees, as though that's not a subsidy for their business. Then there is the $260,000 in subsidies for her family's farm. Oh, she dissembled, that went to my father-in-law, adding that I have never gotten a penny from the farm. Seriously? But wait, she's listed as a partner in the farm, and her financial disclosure forms report that, in fact, she has received $105,000 in income from it. This is Jim Hightower saying, Bachmann says she wants to take government back. And in all seriousness, it looks like she's already clawing back her piece of it.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
Really? Really? This is the song you choose to lead into this story? Really? Really? Another? All right, well, here we go. You've lined it up, so we might as well tee it off. Business Insider, again, the business magazine, Business Insider, has led with the story. An unnamed adult film performer has tested positive for HIV, causing the industry to shut down temporarily in Los Angeles. According to the LA Times, the move was prompted by industry trade group, the Free Speech Coalition, while further testing is performed to confirm results. The infected performer has yet to be named and was tested at an out-of-state facility. This is the second case of HIV in the industry this year. We talked about the first one earlier in the year. And for me, this is the kind of thing that you need to have regulation of. You need to make sure that, and the industry does a pretty good job. They could do a better job. But this is the kind of stuff that, oversight, some rational thought would go into. Good for them for, doing the testing that they do. But I still think it should be more. So, maybe we should send that to the Puerto Rican state senator, looking for his grinder. Advertising the goods, man. So the right wing's losing their mind. And they're all ripped off at President Obama, who evidently, and this is how the story came to me, evidently some researcher was going through some old archives, and they came across a bunch of old documents back in the 30s and 40s and stuff. And some of it was this Dr. John Cutler, who had led a boatload of experiments. This college professor, her name was Susan Reverby from Wesley College. She came across these documents about a Guatemalan study that went on back in the 40s. And so the president said, okay, let's commission a study into this in order. Let's look at it, what happened, so we can try and make things right. Well, it turns out that this study that they had done back in the 40s, of nearly 5,500 people were exposed to venereal disease by human contact or inoculation. They either had it shot into them or, they got it the old-fashioned way. And they went out and they actually gave these venereal diseases to prostitutes, and they went to soldiers, they went to prisoners, and they said, hey, let's pass this on. So through Guatemala, they're spreading this disease because they wanted to find out, and I guess it's a laudable goal if you really be kind of dark about it. They wanted to see if penicillin would prevent the spread of venereal disease and other STDs. No, not so much. But it turns out that 83 people in Guatemala were killed because of this, because they were left untreated. And, you kind of look at this and you go, maybe we should apologize. And Obama did personally apologize to the Guatemalan president, which then, the right went nuts. He's surrendering. He's an apologist. He doesn't understand American exceptionalism. And I got to be honest, giving people disease, not something we should be proud of. There's nothing exceptional about that. In fact, not only did we do it to the Guatemalans, we did it to our own people. Because I remember this, a couple years ago, where they had talked about the Tuskegee experiment, and we've talked about this in the past, where they infected hundreds of African American men with late stage syphilis. They watched them, and again, what kind of doctor would just watch this and give no treatment? You watch these people before your eyes deteriorate, and you just know, hey, well, this is what happened. We're not gonna, we can fix this. We can cure these people, but screw them. They're poor. We're gonna, this is science after all. And I find it amazing that the radicals are, all surrender. Jeez, he's gonna apologize. But again, you look at this, to me, the crimes against humanity. But that's just because I have a conscience. So there you go. The good news coming out of the Obama administration. Evidently, healthcare fraud being prosecuted more this year than last and much more than the years before. In fact, last year the government recovered a record $4 billion from healthcare fraud. And, you know, it's one of the things that I would love the Republicans to get on board with, because everybody knows government's got this gold-plated door with the titanium placard on the wall that says the Office of Waste, Fraud, and Abuse. I wish we would turn those sites on for-profit corporations who suck money out of our coffers, like the health insurance industry, who fattens their bottom line out of our expense. Wouldn't that be a nice thing to do?
Sure would.
And so what you're seeing the Justice Department prosecuting more of these cases of fraud, more of these cases of insurance fraud and Medicare fraud. To be honest, though, to me, my wife got out of the medical billing thing just because, look, once they jump into this, once the investigations start, there is no stone left unturned. Once you get that on you, boy, they are very thorough, as they should be. I mean, if you're cheating, I remember a guy, and a friend of my aunt's, who was a doctor. He was kind of a kook, one of the militia type, teabagger type guys, but a doctor at a very reputable hospital in Cleveland. He was actually billing Medicare for home visits at the same time that he was billing them for surgery. And, as I understand the story and as I've read through the hearing that got him thrown out and had his license taken away, he was actually cheating Medicare pretty substantially by billing these home visits. That's how outrageous he had become at one point. And he went to prison, and he did several years. They stripped his license away, and he went from being a doctor to being lucky to get a day laborer job, moving bricks around. And there's part of me that says, it's kind of a waste of resource, but at the end of the day, you got to make an example out of somebody. And he had to know what he was doing was flat out wrong, and boy, he got it stuck to him.
It was theft. And it was what to me is outrageous. A doctor is someone that, at least societal, as a society, we trust. And here's a man who, without question, betrayed that trust and took taxpayer money in a system that was designed to take care of elderly who need health care. I mean, I don't feel sorry for him at all. Perhaps. The penalty wasn't strong enough, Rick.
Well, I'm going to be honest. At the end of it, I think there were some things that even I didn't agree with on the way they kicked him out of the medical profession. But still, I mean, these fines, these investigations, while I think they're absolutely necessary, are actually rooting out some real fraud and real abuse. Now, the problem is what worries me is that some innocent people get caught up in this. Like my wife was saying, what happens if these doctors are telling me to bill this stuff? I bill it. Medicare then comes back after me. And that's where I have a problem with part of this. But at the end of this, we got to save and pinch every healthcare dollar. And if that means going after somebody who's screwing the system, that's what it means.
Well, and the conservatives have been, since you brought up the subject, conservatives are very good at talking down the health care reform bill, and one of their big points was, he's taking money out of Medicare, billions of dollars, and he was.
The proposal.
But what they don't go out and explain is Obama went after, for instance, the percentage of that the for-profits in the Medicare system were allowed to charge. Under Bush, he let them charge up to 14%. Obama looked at that and said, no. No, that's way, that's just gouging. And he reduced that substantially.
But
that's where the savings were.
That was in the Part C.
Right.
That was to get people to move away from the we the people part of this, the Part A, into that private system.
But my point is, and we had some, initially we had some of the union members that were retired saying, oh my, he's we can't support this health care reform. He's going to hurt Medicare. He's going to hurt our coverage. No, absolutely not. In fact, in some ways, if you think about it, he was reducing the cost and streamlining the system and making Medicare even a better system.
You know, and but look, I got a thousand problems with the health care bill. That's not one of them. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Ken Bezanet, Talk Radio News Service, back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it happen!
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and abroad, Ken Bezanet, Talk Radio News Service. Ken, thanks for taking time for me.
How are you, sir, today?
I'm good. How did you manage the storm this past weekend?
I did pretty well. I was prepared for the worst, which is which would have been one of these. I have a couple of 45, 50-foot oak trees that have been around for a while sitting in my backyard. And, when you listen to the weather report and what was potentially coming, and my only question was it going to be on my roof or my neighbor's roof?
Right.
Followed up by the question, and which would it be better? Would it be better on my neighbor's roof or my roof? You know?
And there is the question, depending if you needed a new roof, I guess. But, what I find interesting is all of the chorus of people who are saying, well, you know, Obama overreacted. We put way too much resource into warning people because it wasn't so bad. I went through some of the stories on Monday, going through some of this stuff going, this was a major storm, at least 33 people, and I think the number has climbed even 40, higher.
40 people dead in 11 states.
Yeah, I mean, you've got all of these deaths. I'm sorry, I don't think we overreacted.
Yeah, $7 to $10 billion estimated now, which means it's going to go up.
Well, I mean, the
it's
one
incredible. Air National Guard helicopters bringing food and water into villages and communities that are completely cut off in Vermont. People in Vermont basically live in towns that are along their waterways. Everything else is mountains. It's rough ground up there. It's beautiful, but it's very hilly. So where do people live? They live in the flat part. And the flat part is down the bottom near the water. And that's why you're hearing about so many, different episodes and so many people being cut off and just how, completely, shut in folks are is the understatement. I mean, there's one couple that were married that those folks and part of their wedding party are still stuck at the resort that the ceremony took place at as an example of everything else. Then just equate everybody who just hung in their homes. And, it's quite a thing.
And it's quite amazing. And what I find equally amazing is there are folks who weathered the storm pretty well. They're not much damage. And they're looking and go, well, that wasn't bad. And grumbling that there was so much emphasis put on taking care of yourself and getting away from the storm, I just find it utterly, first, irresponsible of mm-hmm. the media to focus on that, and just kind of arrogant of us as a nation.
Yeah. Let me say this, in terms of some metrics and some measurements, there were complaints from people in New York City that it was overkill. New York City came away from this thing pristine. Not even stupid accident kind of stuff. Okay? I credit Mayor Bloomberg.
for making the decisions he made. And, you know, he once he opened up mass transit again, the city came back to life. The market was open yesterday, and that was people's gauge. An awful lot of people gauged today by that, whatever, but that's how they looked at it, and that was fine. Another example is death at the Jersey Shore, non-existent.
Yeah, but here's my question. You know, would you have rather had the George W. Bush response, you know, eating cake, playing guitar on the tarmac, you know, a guy who's completely inept in Brownie being the head of FEMA, completely unprepared, and, oh, gee, we didn't know? Or do you want to have people who are overly prepared and, you know, doing as much as they can possibly do to make sure that whatever happens, we're ready for?
Yeah,
I would rather have the people ready.
Yeah, this response is the answer if you're putting them up against each other, with the caveat that this response is a direct result of the response to Katrina. This is what responses are supposed to look like now. People on the inland near the beaches, you didn't hear about a bunch of people getting swept out to sea.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Ken. You know,
they moved a lot of people, and I think that part of it worked.
Yeah, but we can have this argument the whole time, the whole day. At the end of the day, 2004, when it was election time, FEMA and George W. Bush did an amazing job in Florida, making sure that those people had everything they could possibly need. So they weren't completely inept. They just didn't prioritize and really didn't give a rat's behind about those people in New Orleans.
Yeah, they made a bad call there.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
A little bit more than a bad
Yeah. I'm being more generous. I'm giving you plenty of room.
And I will go there. And what's interesting is you've got Michelle Bachmann and these other crazy, way out, bizarre right wingers saying, well, you know, these are the earthquakes and the tornadoes and the hurricanes and all this stuff. It's a sign that God hates gay people.
I'm just
not getting the God stuff. And here, maybe they've got it wrong. Maybe this is God saying, you know, Michelle, shut up. You know, Rick Perry, you are not a prophet. Sit down.
Yeah.
You know, maybe just a little different take on it.
Let me just say this because you give me the great opportunity. On a serious note, you could pile up several comments. Also, Eric Cantor, who, you know, is a representative from Richmond, Virginia, the Republican majority leader, the number two guy in the House on the GOP side, behind the Speaker of the House. And he, you know, once again, made comments along the lines of, you know, yes, we can finance, you know, the aftermath of Irene, but we have to find offsets, which of course means, well, we have to cut the budget to make room for it, in plain English. And I don't have a problem with that comment a week or two from now, but it just seems with, as I said, today you now have airlifting supplies into people in the United States and parts of the United States, and people who are still cut off everywhere. There are people here in the D.C. area, people are just coming back, the remnants of it. I was out for 20 hours. You were on the cusp of this thing in central western Pennsylvania, correct?
Central Pennsylvania, yeah.
Central Pennsylvania. And what did that feel like?
Well, I mean, we had a lot of rain and a lot of wind, and our power is out for a little bit, but we didn't get what, you know, we knew New Jersey and New York and Vermont were going to get. We knew we were going to get that. We just got, you know, the wind damage, trees down, same kind of things you're talking about.
Yeah, you had lines down from damage.
Yep.
Exactly. And that was it. And it was, you know, that's the response on the edge of this thing, and that's a good response. You were out for a couple hours, you said, right?
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. And for me, 20 hours was, I knew what I had in my freezer, what was going to hold, and I knew what I had in my refrigerator that I needed to cook and what I could move into my freezer to use as a cooler.
Yep.
And that was it, and I was fine.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and going back to the God thing for a second, because this is something that I've been thinking about quite often.
Yeah.
You know, since this happened, if this, you know, if you got to use the God thing, mm-hmm. What if this is God saying, you know, I need you folks to come together. I need you folks to take care of one another. Enough of this hooray for me BS. What if the edict coming down from the you know, the sky is we need more community. We need more you know, social action. We need people coming together. That's what I want. That's the edict. Not none of this BS. You're on your own.
Right. I love the Bible because of the interpretations that each and every one of us can possibly have.
Yeah, well, it's like Moby Dick. You can find anything you need in it.
Well, you know, yeah, it's a really, but the plausibility of it. Let me just read this, okay?
Hit it.
Washington, D.C., you'd think by now they'd get the message. An earthquake, a hurricane, are you listening? The American people have done everything they possibly can. Now it's time for an act of God, and we're getting it. And that was Bachman. Michelle Bachman at a weekend campaign event. And that was it. And she now says it was a joke. And I now say there are 40 dead. No, $7 billion to $10 billion in damage. And to keep pointing in the same direction, because I find it to be amazing since I lived in that neck of the woods, food and water having to be airlifted into parts of Vermont.
It's amazing. She can say it's a joke all she wants.
Yeah.
It's not.
She's having a tough call of it.
Well, because she's really clearly not ready for prime time.
Her honeymoon after
the Iowa caucus.
Ames straw poll was, thank you for coming. You know what I mean? That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. What else is going on up there?
But here's the thing. This whole disaster. There's an opportunity to put some folks back to work. There's a lot of things that need to be cleaned up, a lot of homes that need to be redone. There's a jobs plan in this, so I guess, maybe we could take that disaster capitalism that the right loves to benefit from and use it here at home, because there's a lot of rebuilding that we need. There's a lot of infrastructure that we need rebuilt.
Yeah. If you're going to do it right now and do it complete along the lines of the repairs that have to be made. Don't just build a new bridge. Build a new bridge that connects to a new road.
Yeah, and build some new levees so we don't have to have these problems every time.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, I don't know what. Boy, I'll tell you that. The calculus in this storm, the fact that it was, basically just did the same thing up and down the coast, which is saturated the earth and old trees came up by the roots more so than, the usual kind of hurricane that, as I said, breaks the limbs. They just snap off. I've been through a couple of those more than these things. But this one, I mean, I don't know how you can prevent this.
It's amazing. I mean, my wife and I...
You know what I mean? I don't think you can prevent this with levees.
Well, you can't, but it would have, I think, lessened a little bit. But you look at the reality, as in my wife and I took a bike ride here in Harrisburg on the bike path, and you had literally maybe 200-year-old trees just pulling themselves right out of the ground.
Yeah, that was it. But that's what you saw, right? You saw a bunch of uprooted trees, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was it. That's the thing in this storm. It saturated the ground.
But it's
the
been the last couple of storms that have came up.
And they came up big. I mean, if they come up at the roots, the whole thing's coming down, and that's got to go across a road if it's along a street.
Yep.
Or in my backyard, it was going on my roof or my neighbor's roof.
It funny, the guy in the reporter from D.C. in Ocean City being covered with raw sewage.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. That's
dedication.
Ball of wax.
That's dedication.
God forbid, but one of these big blows is going to come in one time, and it's going to bring the awesome, surge that they always talk about, and they're going to get wiped out on beaches up and down the coast all at once, and you'll hear about that, and you'll be like, whoa, and they'll be like, yeah, guess what? They finally got it right. That was the maximum. That they were talking about. It's become it's a trite necessity, I suppose.
Yeah.
I turned that stuff down, and every now and then I tuned into what meteorologists were saying, particularly when the graphic would pop up of the path.
Right.
That's the thing, they've obviously got some ways to go in trying to measure still wind velocity and what the sustained wind velocity is going to be, probably more importantly, after it touches down, et cetera. On land, but the tracking 15 years ago, they would have been a call to evacuate north to central Florida because of the way that hurricane looked like it was going. But instead, they use the tracking now, and they're like, no, it's going to hit up here.
And they knew.
Actually, in the top of North Carolina. They got that part right, and that they said that there was a bag of water that was going to fall all up and down the coast. They got that part right.
Yeah, but at the end of this, you still got to give Obama credit, and you still got to give the administration all along the coast, all of those, Christie, Bloomberg, all of the people who got their folks prepared, you've got to give all of them credit for doing the right thing.
Christie, there's no...
As much as I can't stand Christie.
About anybody getting hurt on beaches.
Yep.
Everything is sort of inland and kind of freakish. Streams turn into small rivers. Big rivers like the Connecticut turned into lakes and, oxbows. And the oxbows were formed in the flatlands.
along the river. And the flatlands were either fields or fields with farmhouses or, in some cases, towns, you know? And then every large town is built around water up there. Everything else is mountains. This is just a perfect storm, which is probably the worst name that's ever come up for a horrific situation by a natural disaster, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why probably now is not right time to play politics. You can wait a week on that.
Yeah, well, you got to understand, these folks have no compassion for others. It's all about me, 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 me. That's their mantra. That's their viewpoint. And it's just coming out. And you got to give them credit for being honest and being upfront, saying, look, we don't give a damn about you.
Yeah.
It's about us. It's about our ideology. It's about our blind faith.
Yeah. Hey, on my way out the door here, let me just say, August, unfortunately, a dubious distinction, the deadliest month for U.S. troops in the nearly decade-long war in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
66 U.S. troops have died so far this month, with almost half of those casualties coming when the Taliban shot down the helicopter carrying the elite forces and others earlier this month. So this is a dubious distinction.
And again, I ask the question for what? And that's a whole topic for a whole nother day. I say we gather the sheep and we get the flock out.
Yeah.
Ken Bazinet, I appreciate the time. Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Have a great night.
All righty. Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Report coming out of the Patriot News, local unemployment in the Harrisburg-Carlisle area. The rate has remained unchanged at about 7.2% in July compared to June. That's down from about 7.8% compared to July of 2010. According to statistics, the State Department of Labor and Industry released today, state unemployment rate was 7.8 in July, up from about 7.6 compared to the prior month. The national unemployment rate decreased by 0.1% to about 9.1% compared to June. There are around 20,300 unemployed in the Harrisburg-Carlisle metropolitan statistic area in July, up by 100 over June. There were 279,000 in the labor force last month, which is down by 100 jobs compared to the previous month. Although it's still high comparatively statewide, this area is not doing all that bad. We talked about that situation in Hershey. I just wanted to get into a little bit what the State Department is getting into. There's a report coming out of the Patriot News as to exactly what are they doing behind the scenes. On Monday, the State Department said that the majority of the complaints resulted from insufficient pre-department orientation, difficult work, high housing costs, few cultural opportunities, and the lack of responsiveness by CET USA, which was the company that recruited these workers overseas. If it finds that CET USA is not in compliance, the department has sanctions it could impose, including probation or termination of the nonprofit's involvement in the J-1 visa program. Acting Assistant Secretary Adam Arelli with the State Department's Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs said he would not speculate on possible outcomes or penalties. Arelli said that the probe would continue this week. This is the first time there has been a widespread protest related to the J-1 program. While the State Department has fielded complaints about the work travel program in the past, they have always been of an individual nature. The students and their labor organizations are demanding that they be repaid for the cost of their visits to the United States, anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000, and that the jobs at the plant go to local workers. What the State Department ultimately needs to do, Rick, is that this whole relationship between the J-1 temporary visa programs and the corporate interests, it needs to be thoroughly looked at throughout the whole country, because apparently there's widespread abuse, and I think we need to go back to the original intent, and that was to bring students in from other countries to really give them a true American experience. And apparently it's gone from that to a situation where all too often these young kids, and they are young kids, are being taken advantage of. You touched on John Purcell. John Purcell, for those of you who don't know, was at one time a very powerful figure on Capitol Hill. He was the Republican leader in the House for years. He has been brought up on charges, a total of 82 counts of theft, conspiracy, conflict of interest. He has been accused, as many of them have in general terms, he's been accused of using public money for political purposes. Difference with Purcell is that he used a large amount of money, went out and purchased very state-of-the-art technology, used that technology to go after his political enemies. And the interesting thing is, Rick, he went after both Democrats and Republicans. If there were Republicans within his caucus that didn't vote the way he liked, he went out and waged dirty campaigns against them. To give you an idea, Mike Vian had 52 counts. Now, Mike Vian's case was a little bit different, but in general, the charges were basically the same. He's currently serving 7 to 12 years. This man has 82 counts. He is facing a lot of years in prison. One last story, AP story coming out of Alabama, Rick. The federal judge down there has blocked the Alabama immigration law for the time being. U.S. District Judge Sharon Blackburn ruled Monday that the law will not go into effect on Thursday. She will rule on the merits of the law by September 29th. The governor of Alabama has come out and said, you know, they need this law. They need the law to make sure that illegal immigrants are not taking jobs away from native Alabamans. But there are some things that this U.S. district judge has looked at, and she's not quite sure she's going to make her decision. Some of them, I think, border on unconstitutionality. In fact, it's very similar. This law is very similar to the Arizona law, which ran into trouble with the federal courts. And it looks like Alabama's immigration law might do the very same thing. And I think it's good that we look at that law and you know, take our time in determining, because there's some things that come very close to being unconstitutional. Back to you, Rick.
All righty. Now that we've jaked it up, let's take a break, and we will come back to wrap things up. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Workers in the late 1930s began exerting their recently guaranteed right to organize and join unions. Millions of workers flocked to join the labor organization of their choosing to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Factory, mill, and mine owners, not eager to embrace the changes, fought vehemently to deny workers their rights. As company tactics grew more heavy-handed and brutal, the workers' organizing methods changed. Sit-down strikes became a way for workers to demand their rights and to force management to listen. With a wave of a handkerchief, the tip of a hat, workers would shut down their machines, lay down their hammer, and sit down. Workers at the Hershey Chocolate Factory in Hershey, Pennsylvania, seeking to reduce the 60-hour-long work week, decided to form a union. Initially, an agreement was reached, but as the economy took a downturn, the company willfully violated the agreement by laying off the most senior workers, those who just happened to be the most ardent union supporters. The workers voted to strike the very next day. At 11 a.m. on April 2nd, 1937, a red handkerchief was waved and the workers began their first sit-down strike in Pennsylvania's history. The company reacted by forming the Loyal Workers Club. These strikebreakers consisted of hired thugs from New York City and local farmers, dairy producers, and shopkeepers who were dependent on the factory. On April 6, Hershey organized a loyalty parade. After hours of rallying speeches, the lathered-up Loyal Workers Club mob found pipes and clubs that had been manufactured at the Hershey planing mill. The angry mob headed to the Hershey factory to throw their strikers out. Songs of solidarity sung by the striking workers could be heard from inside the factory as the angry mob burst into the plant. Blocking the only exit, the Loyal Workers Club, loyal only to management and greed, began pummeling the workers as they tried to escape. The assault left numerous workers bloody and beaten, many unconscious. Within days, Hershey reopened and recognized a renamed version of the Loyal Workers Club. In May of 1938, the National Labor Relations Board ruled Hershey had violated the law and the company union was dissolved. Soon, the workers joined the Bakery and Confectionery Workers Local 464, who have faithfully represented the workers ever since. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can go to the website and download our podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. A couple of quick hits, if you will. UPI is reporting that maybe the Tea Party label has some negativity attached with it, according to a Rasmussen poll. 43% of likely voters consider the Tea Party a negative description for candidates. 43%. While only 29% view it as positive, you gotta kinda wonder if they're losing their luster. The other part of this that caught my eye is being labeled a liberal was probably the worst thing you could possibly be called in this country. 21% say it's a positive thing, while 38% viewed it as negative. And then 34%, I don't know. So they've done a nice job of beating up on the word liberal. And look, they've spent billions of dollars doing it, and you got to give them credit for that. Here's something else the Chinese are screwing up. You know, we complain about Chinese-made goods being a bunch of cheap plastic crap, but now the folks in Iran are upset. Evidently, they can't print Korans anywhere else but in China, and the Chinese-printed Korans are littered with spelling mistakes and some errors. There's part of me that thinks, you know, if the Chinese worked hard enough, they could probably change the whole thing around. Who knows? Stop and think about our trade policies for a while, globally, where the Chinese are now publishing even the Koran. They make the American flag. You know, why not the Koran? They're equal opportunity producers. Interesting story from Australia. A guy said he accidentally threw out, look, you know, the right keeps telling us buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. Well, this guy in Australia bought his wife a whole bunch of gold jewelry. And he decided that he'd throw it out. And I go, why would you do that? He says he accidentally threw out the $50,000 worth of his wife's jewelry in an attempt to fool any would-be robbers. So he thought a good hiding place would be to split it into three rubbish bags so that if the thieves did come in, they wouldn't find it. But turns out that she took the trash out. To locate the lost items, they had to go through decaying, compacted waste. And they had to systematically evacuate, and they had to do all of this stuff. And good for them. 1,400 tons of waste each week. Ain't happening. Congratulations. You just threw out $50,000 worth of gold.
And they never found it.
Oh, they're never going to find it.
Oh,
you know?
My.
You know? And good. That's what you get for trying to outsmart criminals. Maybe, you know, get yourself one of those lock boxes.
Well, how about it's been in all the newspapers, Rick. How about a safe? Do you think?
That would cost a couple $100. And, you know, when you're buying $50,000 worth of jewelry, you just don't have the extra income to go and buy
it. It's called a safety deposit box.
That costs money, too.
In a local bank.
You know, I wonder, we should ask, I wonder if we could get Newt Gingrich to tell us what he does with all the jewelry he buys.
With all the jewelry he buys his wife.
The hundreds of thousands of dollars and pieces. She's got to have some really sizable rocks.
Well, by the size of his accounts, I would say she probably has close to $1 million worth of rocks. That's a lot of rocks.
You gotta love it. Anyway, again, if you missed any portion of the program, go to therickssmithshow.com. We do archive all our programs right there for your entertainment, your enjoyment. And, of course, if you have a smartphone, make sure you download the Stitcher app. That will enable you to take your class war on the go. Have a great night. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. And, again, Rick at therickssmithshow.com if you've got a problem. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.